I'm excited to do this, man. Thank you so much for jumping on the channel with me, because I've been really looking forward to having this chat, and I'm sorry I got delayed.
Oh, it's not an issue, man. You know, we're all busy searching for the truth, so it's not even an issue. And I've also been super anxious to get to the chance to sit down and talk to you, because I feel like you really know your stuff,
Well,
and I
we'll find
really want
out.
to hear what you have to say.
I know a little bit, but I don't know that much, man. We'll see how much we find out from each other, during this whole discussion. But for everyone listening, I'm sitting down with John, aka the Undead Gaucho, for a fireside chat. What that really means is I haven't prepared any sort of questions beforehand. We're just gonna kind of dive in and see where we end up going. And I'm happy to do something like this with you, man, because you seem like a chill guy, and I think we're gonna have a good time.
Definitely. And the same thing about you, man. I feel like that's what I why I was so happy to get the chance to talk to you. I was like, he seems like the kind of guy I'd probably hang out with. So
Well, why don't we kick this off with you telling us, why did you make your YouTube channel? A link for which to everyone listening will be in the description box below. And why did you call it the Undead Gaucho as well, by the way?
okay. When I started my channel, really, I never started it with the intention to talk about the paranormal, right? I picked up a camera because I've always been into filmmaking and using cameras. I used to skateboard a lot, so since I was little, I've had cameras. And I was like, I gotta start filming again. I gotta do something. And the platform is there, so I'm like, all right, I'll just start a channel and start messing around and see what I can do. And from there, obviously, my interest started taking over. And the channel started growing. So the Undead Gaucho, the name the Undead Gaucho, really just was a play on that. I'm in Argentina. A part of it too is like that. For those of you that don't know what a gaucho is, it's basically like an Argentine cowboy. So, and the undead was just sort of like I guess what would you guys say, like a cheeky thing, right?
Right.
That ended up being like it ended up playing in perfectly because I was like, well, now I'm not going to change it or anything. I'm just going to keep it because it's been the name since the channel started and I like it. And I felt like it played in perfect when I started talking more about high strangeness and all those kinds of topics.
Right, yeah, man. What you're doing is obviously really, making an impact, and you're doing a good job. What got you actually interested in the UFO subject, though, mate? Was there anything that sparked it off in particular?
You know, lately I've been thinking about that a lot. Just because I try to go back and think when, you know, what situation sparked that interest for me. I know that my mother has always been like really open about that topic ever since I was a little boy. So I kind of grew up in a household where it was discussed. And to this day, we still, anytime I go to my house, like we'll have open discussions about the UFO phenomenon or
That's
about
cool.
high strangeness and stuff like that. It's never been like that taboo in my household. But, I don't know. I've always just been into high strangeness, and I feel like the UFO phenomenon is a big part of that subject. So,
Oh yeah, for sure. But I mean, like, obviously, you've decided to make a channel. Not everyone does that. A lot of people just listen to other channels. So you've obviously
yeah.
got a passionate interest in getting something out of this. So is there nothing in particular that made you go, you know what, I'm gonna sit down, I'm gonna actually try and start putting something together and putting it out to people?
Well, I'd always felt kind of alone looking into the subject.
Right.
I grew up in Los Angeles. I lived in Venice Beach. I used to
Nice, man.
surf and skateboard a lot. So my group of friends were not like really interested in these kinds of things. So it was something that I kept to myself. But anytime I'd go to a library or anything, I'd grab a book on, you know, the Mothman or
Right,
the
yeah.
UFO subject or whatever. And it's just something that always stuck with me. Like if you'd see me at a party with a laptop, maybe at a friend's house, I might be the guy like looking at UFO videos while everyone else was like partying. But of course I joined back in the party, but I don't know, it's always been something that I've tried. I felt like I needed to find a community. I needed to find people that were looking into the same subject. And the channel kind of started taking me in that direction. And one day, you know, the first time I started talking about it on my channel, I was like, am I really gonna do this? Like, I'll talk openly where anyone can see this. And Yeah, I was so inspired. And so I felt like I was actually making something that mattered.
Right.
When I started talking about that subject, that I decided, you know what, I got to get out there and meet people and try to build my own community and see what I can find, what I can do.
I hear that, man. I hear that. And, you know, it's because for me, it wasn't really the same. I mean, I had an interest, but it was only passive. And like, I mean, from a kid, if I was in the library or, you know, in the school library or anything, I would always look for a book that had something about mysteries or, like, you know, Loch Ness Monster or something like that. I was interested in that kind of stuff to that degree, but it was never like something that genuinely was a part of my life or entered into my thought process, and until I had my own experiences or started learning about the possibility of having my own experiences and then had them. But, you know, it's like, it's a weird journey for me because it was quite abrupt. You know, it was like this weird learning curve of finding out some information that I felt was actually accurate when it came to, you know, initiating contact, which is still a really controversial thing to get into. And I guess like my jumping off point was like a deep end, because I'm still having so many arguments with people in the UFO community about the fact that this is, you know, actionable and you can do this. And it's like, oh man, what have I got myself into here? And what the hell were these things doing turning up and throwing me in this position? So, I mean, I haven't had like a long standing interest, but I've always been interested in mysterious stuff, man. But, you know, I think that it's really good to have more people, because you're younger. How old are you?
I'm in my 30s.
And you thought, yeah, because so, you look like a young guy. It's good to have more young people getting interested in this, because, like, you know, to be honest, there are a lot of, and no offense to them, because they've all been doing amazing work, but even they'll agree there is a lot of old faces in the UFO community, and it's really refreshing to have younger people getting involved. And I think a lot of that's got to do with TTSA and stuff like that. Well, actually, you know, one thing I'd like to ask you is, when did you kind of get tuned in to what was happening with Tom DeLonge, TTSA? Because I remember watching the Joe Rogan interview and I was like, huh, okay, like, this is weird, he's saying stuff I'm not quite sure what's going on. And from that point I was starting to kind of keep a lookout. But when did you realize all of this official stuff was starting to pour out of the US government and TTSA coming about?
Well, when the you know, the Go Fast, the FLIR and the gimbal video dropped,
yeah, right,
that was probably like the craziest day ever for me. Like, I still remember that, because I was like, like I said, I was the kid that was like looking at UFO videos all the time. My friends were like, so
this,
dude, stop.
This was like the one for you.
Yeah, because that's what I was doing. I was like looking for at least a video that made me feel like this is real or this can't be debunked. And then it was like, I didn't just get one. I got three. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. It's a new world, right? I woke up the next day, like ready to go to work, like, thinking everyone was going to be like, did you see the news? UFOs are real. And that didn't happen.
Nope. You know?
I made a video about it too a long time ago, where I'm like in a park and I'm all frustrated I'm just saying, like, I don't understand why people aren't, you know, giving this the attention that it deserves. But over time, you know, I realized that is what's going to happen during this whole process, I believe. So, I guess we have to wait and see what's going to happen. But I've been lately, I've been kind of more and more weary that people may not ever like accept it the way me and you would accept it, because like we're open to the topic, just like they don't accept a lot of things that are real, like this subject, but like, you know, everyday common real things.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I've kind of had that sobering moment as well, and I guess I had a couple of them, because first of all, when I first kind of started realizing there was legitimacy to this and I was actually researching it and looking into things, you know, first of all, I was, before I made Project Unity, I was just telling, you know, anyone and everyone. Like, luckily I've got a group of friends who I live nearby, really, you know, really good friends who are all totally on board with what's happening. They've actually had their own interesting experiences with me outside, you know, in at night looking up at the stars, but they're luckily quite interested. But I remember, you know, I'd be trying to tell different people, especially on Facebook, I'd be posting like, hey, Tom DeLonge's talking about this. And the moment I mentioned Tom DeLonge and UFOs, at that point, anyone who knew about Blink 182 was like, what are you talking about? A rock star and UFOs. Like, some people, I swear to God, right, when I posted up this was way back, I posted up on Facebook a post about ATIP and just saying, you know, people need to understand that this program has been announced by the New York Times. And, you know, this is really legitimizing the UFO issue. And, you know, people should pay attention to this. And I had like a friend of mine who I'd known from school message me genuinely concerned I'd had a mental breakdown. And it's like, holy shit, right? You know, because like this isn't tinfoil hat crazy stuff. This is, I mean, some people don't trust the New York Times, but they've put out a front page story about a Pentagon program, but still that wasn't enough, or they just wouldn't look into it. And so there was a lot of abrasiveness when I first started trying to put stuff out. And then at some point I just realized I needed to make a platform, like a channel, and basically through that medium, instead of going out and trying to basically shake people by the shoulders, people would just come to me, you know, people would just follow the channel. And if they liked it, they yeah. liked it. And so from that, I've managed to cultivate a really good little audience of people. But at the same time, and I think all the people listening would agree, what I would really like to see is this coming outside of the community more and more, and seeing more people get involved from the mainstream. And, do you think that we're going to get further engagement from the mainstream? I know you just said that you feel like you've come to a point where you don't think that everyone's going to embrace this, and I totally agree with you. I don't think everyone will, but do you ever think that we're going to get to a point in our lifetimes where this is openly acknowledged as just kind of like a general fact of life, that this stuff is out there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm disclosure, this idea of disclosure, and what everyone's fighting for it. We're all trying to get the truth out there. We're all trying to figure out what's going on. And we want everyone to wake up and pay attention to this subject, because it's been interacting with us. It seems this phenomenon's been interacting with us for, in my opinion, like our whole human history. So the role it must play must be very large, in my opinion. But will they ever wake up? I don't know, you know, but the media seems to be waking up. Now, what that means, it's still something that, you know, at the beginning, I was a little worried, right? When the videos were dropping, and I was thinking, wait a minute. So the government is actually not keeping the secret anymore. What's going on? Right. Then I realized the whole story, the backstory with TTSA and everything. But also a lot of members of TTSA used to work for the government. Right. So I don't know. It's a strange world we're living in, because its disclosure is kind of happening. It's just like the general public as a whole, for some reason. I mean, I don't know if I should say for some reason, because if you just look around, you'll see it. You'll see this delusion, this kind of this view that the general public normally has on certain subjects and things going on around us, where like, unless everyone's okay with it and everyone's on board, they don't really pay attention to it. And I feel like the UFO subject's going to cause that kind of divide in the beginning. And we may see it in our lifetime. I do think we may see it. You know, I keep going back and forth with this idea, though. Like recently, I've been going back and forth trying to think, like, is disclosure really ever going to fully happen? You know?
Mm.
But I am fighting for it. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean,
what can I do?
You know, do you think like full disclosure in respects to all information, like everything being held by governments or private groups being made public, do you think that's possible absent basically like a full blown revolution? Because for me, I don't see how we would ever, because some people are so hard line in the fact that disclosure means nothing unless it's everything on the table. And it's kind of like, I just don't think that that's realistic, because, you know, they're never going to give up this 70 years worth of secrets. I mean, it's probably an unfathomable amount of information that they've kept back. And I don't know how far they've got with anything like reverse engineering, but just in terms of data, you know, they've probably got so much. And I just don't know if it's possible to get that kind of stuff dislodged without basically breaking into the secure sites yourselves and going into the skiffs and taking all the data and you know, doing it that way. I mean, do you think that there's any way that you'd ever get that type of engagement?
No.
No.
I don't think so. That's my whole thing. That's why I keep going back and forth with it. This idea that a lot of people have that a UFO is going to land on the White House lawn, or that the president's going to come out and say, hey, you know what? I know the truth and UFOs are real. And this, I don't think that could ever happen.
Yeah.
I think what could happen is that slowly what's happening now will continue for, you know, a period of time until it's just common knowledge. And it's just like,
it just accepted. Kind of like fades into the norm.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like that's the only way it'll be able to happen.
I think that's probably the way that if there is any sort of interaction with the gatekeepers and the people who are holding the cards with anything like TTSA and any of the disclosure, like the UAPTF, if any of this is like a really officially sanctioned greenlit interaction and kind of dissemination effort, then it would make sense to me to go that scenario that we've just outlined, in terms of, you know, you basically just ebb and flow it out so that there's not too much dramatic information coming out at once, to the point at which everyone could potentially, you know, go pitchforks and torches and start burning down the Pentagon because they're so angry. Yeah. And instead, just enough to kind of get people interested but not enraged. And as it goes on and on and on, little bits come out and out. Yeah. And I don't think they're going to address the history. This is one of my things, is I think that things like the Nimitz and what was the other one? I forgot the name of the other carrier strike group, but Princeton, I think. Princeton, isn't it? But the Nimitz events, these events, I think that these are being used as almost like a new Roswell. I mean, it's not the same scenario like a crash, but I think that these events are being used as a way to just kind of modernize it, along with the term UAP instead of UFO. I think they're trying to distance themselves from, you know, this 70 years or perhaps even more of secrecy surrounding the topic. And I just don't think that they're ever going to, as in when I say they, I'm talking about the United States Defense Intelligence Bureaucracy. I just don't understand why people would think that they would give all of that up, because it would genuinely, I think if that kind of data drop happened, you could expect a revolution.
Yeah, for sure. And just think about, I don't know, think about some sort of like a concept or an idea that existed in the past, right? You know how, like I was saying earlier, like groups of people will think something, they'll all go along with something if everybody believes it, then everybody does it. But that's happened a lot of time throughout human history. And we've done the wrong thing a lot of times throughout human history. And it doesn't change from one day to the next. You know, think about, you know, religious wars and the wars that continue to still happen. But I'm saying racism and all these things that continue to happen. You know, it's slowly over time, people become more educated. People become more open. People start to understand, you know, how could that have ever happened? You know, how could people have ever treated other human beings that way? But it's not one day to the next, you know, where a president could come out and say, hey, this is all wrong, you guys.
Right.
Like, and I feel like people want that. But I do think, too, that, you know, people have been dedicating their lives to this subject. There's a lot of people, like we said earlier, in the community that are much older. I actually did a live last night and I brought that up because I was talking about how there aren't so many females.
Yeah, I saw that pop up. Researchers.
Yeah. And I brought up this, my analytics on my channel. And I said that most of my audience is like 25 to 50 and they're all male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. mine's like 94% male.
Yeah. And,
shout out to the few girls that are watching.
And, I think that, imagine me and you, right? We're talking now and we were in this as, you know, in our 30s, imagine being in our 50s, our 60s. And going through all the phases that ufology has gone through, that this search has gone through, and still not feeling like you have that credible evidence, you know, I feel like that's more of an issue too. Like, that's why we see those kinds of reactions where people are like, either it's everything or nothing. Because they've been waiting for 20 years, you know, they've been waiting for their whole lives.
Yeah, there's no disputing that. No, it's totally true. I mean, you know, for me personally, because I mean, I'm 25 right now. I'm going on 26 in January, and so for me, I feel like, you know, touch wood, as long as everything's fine, I've got a lot of years ahead of me, and I'm willing to I'm willing to wait another 10 years if it takes 10 years for this to be like really realized in life. And a lot of people are not, because they might not have 10 years. You know, I'm being straight up with that. Some people genuinely don't have that time left, and they want to see this realized before they move on. And I think that we've had, you know, we've had, the thing is, one thing that, and I don't want to be too negative, you know, because this is a
Yeah.
thing, but at the same time, I think that the community expects a lot, and we've had crazy things happen. I mean, you think about
Yeah.
all of the years and years and years of research and tireless effort put in by civilians trying to pry open any sort of information on this. And you know, basically what you've got is you've just got decades of hard work, and it's only just now starting to come out, but it's coming out in such a big way in terms of the official acknowledgments. I mean, there isn't much else you can compare what's happening right now to back in the day. I mean, some people look at the UAPTF and things like that and say it's a Project Blue Book 2.0, or it could be something like that. But I mean, I personally don't know if that's the case at all. I think we're in a completely different time to that time. And I think that even though there is still a stigma on this, people are a lot more receptive to the idea that this is real, especially if it's coming from official bodies, which it is. It's coming from official bodies now. The Pentagon is talking about the UAPTF,
Yeah.
you know, so this is serious. And so I think that for people who have been in this for a long time, I do understand the frustration, but I think that we also need to recognize that even if we're not where you want to be right now, we have made such huge steps forward. I mean, you know, it's brilliant to see where we are right now.
Oh, I agree. And like I said, I've been into this subject probably like I tr that's why I've been trying to think like when it started, and I
Yeah.
think back when I was really small, and I had a lot of high strangeness stuff going on throughout my life, like weird situations and stuff that happened. But nothing really, yeah, I never seen a physical craft or anything of that
Can you
nature.
give us any interesting story you might have?
Oh yeah, well, I was on that UFO podcast recently,
Yeah, I haven't had time to check that out though, but I will.
and I shared this story about when I was a kid. I lived in this apartment in Culver City, in Los Angeles, and my brothers had grown up there. It was like I was born there, and I lived there till like I was, I don't know, like 9 or 10. But I would see like shadow beings
Right.
in my bedroom at night, and I didn't never made that connection until I was older and I was reading a book and I started reading about shadow beings and shadow people, and I read a few cases and I was just sitting there and I was thinking and I was like, wait a minute, that matches perfectly and exactly with what I experienced as a kid. So I would be in my room, obviously sleeping or trying to go to sleep, in the dark, and I'd see this figure just walking around my room all the time. And as a kid, obviously, who knows, right? You're a little kid, maybe you're seeing things. Maybe it's just the reflection of the light coming through. There was a big window in my bedroom. But it was a dark room, and I just kept seeing this thing would freak me out. And over time, it was like, it was driving me crazy because I'd see this thing all the time. I had to like roll over to go to bed or cover my head with the sheets, to try to go to sleep. And I would see it so much, and my dad was like, you gotta be a man, you gotta face it, because he thought it was my imagination,
Yeah.
and I obviously at the time I thought it was my imagination too, right? And today I still tell this story saying like, look, I was young, I just feel like it was a strange experience. So one night I decide, like, I'm gonna get up and I'm gonna face this. I'm gonna face my fears, right? Expecting that when I walk up to it, it's gonna be a coat rack or it's gonna just
Yeah.
disappear or whatever. And I get up, I walk up to it, and the weird thing was it stuck with me my whole life, this image. It was obviously taller than me, a bit taller than me, kind of like a grown person, an adult. And it was like moving in and out. I don't know how to say this. Like I said, this the same thing happened when I was on the podcast. It was like kind of like vibrating. Like it reminds me like of a tribal dance, like a quick tribal dance.
Right,
And
right.
it looked down at me. So I went up to it, and then it acknowledged that I was there and looked down at me. And that like scared me
Wow.
to the point where like my brain exploded, right?
Yeah.
Like my brain, I couldn't process what was happening. So I just bolted and I started running out of the room. And when I ran out of the room, there's a hallway that goes to my living room. And I stop for some reason. I look down the hallway before I get into my parents' room because I'm running to my parents, obviously, because I'm like, I think I was like 7 or 8 or 9 between there. I don't remember exactly. And I look down the hall and I clearly remember seeing the same kind of figures, just a bunch of them in the living room. And they were all doing the same movement. They were all kind of swaying in and out, it seemed like they were moving in unison. And
dude, that's giving me somehow, goosebumps.
Well, yeah, it was kind of scary, right? It was very scary, but I still kind of get uncomfortable when I tell the story just because I start to remember it.
And yeah,
I think like, wow, that's kind of crazy. But it's been a long time, so I have to piece it all together. You know how memories kind of fade over time. But
when was the last time
I saw the
sorry, go on, keep telling me
that. Okay, no, so I see them, and the weird thing was too is like how the one in the room in my bedroom sort of reacted to me noticing it.
Yeah.
The ones in the living room, they all turned around. I don't know how I could tell they turned around because they didn't have features. They didn't have like faces or anything. They were just like shadows, like big shadow beings or something, you know? And they all turned around at the same time and they were all doing that swaying movement. And then that was it. I ran into my parents' room screaming. My mom woke up. I ran straight to my mom. And then my mom started screaming because she thought there was somebody in the house.
Oh, so she saw her.
I don't know. Like to this day, I really haven't. Like we talked about it a few times and, you know, I feel like she saw it, but I feel like she might've also thought that I actually, the level of fear that I had, I think she might've just thought like there was an intruder or something. And my dad actually gets up and he runs to the bedroom door. He slams the door and he gets against the door. Like he also thought there was an intruder, but of course I was little. I ran into the room. They were probably knocked out sleeping and I ran in yelling, screaming. There was somebody in the house probably. And they freaked out. But the thing was like 7 or 8, like 7, 8 or 9, like right there. And then when we left that apartment, it never happened again.
Huh.
Never ever in my life. Never saw anything like that ever again.
So would it be fair to say that you think it was probably the apartment?
Yeah. When I think about it, I think it might've been the apartment. Somebody had gotten shot in the front door of the apartment. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but I feel like maybe, you know, you never know.
That's a weird story, man. But I do know
that people had died outside of the apartment and stuff like that. So it was a weird story. And those kinds of things, like, so I was always kind of like, I don't know, right? I always had this weird feeling inside that there was something more to reality than what we were experiencing. Even though after that moment and we moved to Venice and we lived next to the beach, I never had an experience like that. And I would always be in the dark, like trying to find it again, trying to experience it again when I was getting older. And it was just like, never ever happened again. And I kind of just grew up and just forgot about it. And then I was doing some research and I remembered the story and I was like, wow, that matches perfectly.
Oh yeah.
And I do know that a lot of people could say, you know, sleep paralysis causes that. Now that if you're like, but the thing that bothers me about just my story in general is that I was awake, is that I was walking around. Unless I was sleepwalking and I felt like I was awake, right? I don't know. It's just a story.
You said, you're a child, but I mean, at the same time, it's pretty vivid.
Yeah. And also another thing I was thinking recently too, just a thought, right? Was with the abduction phenomenon and how people sometimes see what they want to see or they don't see actually what, you know, they don't actually see.
Yeah. It shifts the perception. Being,
they see something else. Yeah. And I was watching a documentary too, like, an animation documentary. There was like an animation in the documentary and I shared it on Twitter like a few days ago, and it was about abductions and the animator, I guess he was like an abductee or something because it was only a clip, and he drew like 4 or 5 grays walking in unison, like moving in unison in a pattern. And I was like, oh wow, it brought the story right back into my head, seeing them all move in unison like that. But I don't know. I never put all my chips in one corner, yeah. You know, even if it's my own experience. That's one story. I did have an experience when I was older, but I can.
Yeah, please.
That one's a little crazier. I never shared that one.
Hey, well, there we go. We've got an exclusive.
this story actually blows my mind so much. Like it made me feel so uncomfortable when it happened that I feel like my mind just tries to forget about it because I can't find an explanation to what happened.
Wow, okay.
So this happened maybe, I don't know, like 6 years ago or 5 years ago. No, like 6 years ago, probably. And it was here in Argentina. I was obviously researching UFOs and stuff. I was super into that. So I was looking into high strange and stuff. It's always there, you know, so I always take that into consideration. You know, if you're looking into this kind of stuff, you never know what could happen. You know, like mm-hmm. Maybe you lost your mind and you're starting to see stuff, you know what I mean? But I was at this nightclub and I was like working at the nightclub and I decided to leave early because I was like, I don't know, I was like talking about money or something and I just was like, you know what, whatever, I gotta go. I was just not in a good mood and I left. And there's a train track by the nightclub and I had to go take the bus, but it was like 3 a.m. So there wasn't that many people out. It was a Tuesday. So there's not many people. This nightclub did like things for tourists. So I'm getting to the train track and I see this person come. There's like, I don't know how to say this. It's like a metal barrier, right? That stops you from crossing the tracks.
Yep.
It's like to walk around before you cross the tracks. So I hear the train coming kind of from far away. So I stop at the barrier thing. And I see on the other side of the track to my left, probably like what, like 100 feet away or something like that, a person walking up to the track that looked like a homeless person because of their clothing. It was like tattered clothing and stuff like that. And it's dark though. So I'm just looking at him like, whatever, you know, like somebody else walking to the other side of the road. They're going to have to wait to cross too. So I'm just standing there. And the guy gets real close to the track. Like he doesn't stop at the barrier. He gets really close and he's drinking a bottle of something. He looks kind of like a drunk or something. I'm assuming because he's drinking a bottle. And he's like on the tracks at this point and the train's coming. And I'm looking over at him thinking, this guy's going to get hit by the train. This guy's going to get run over by the train. I'm thinking he's going to move, whatever, but he's kind of swaying back and forth with the bottle in his hand. And the train's coming. It's coming. And I start yelling to the guy, hey, man, you're too close to the train. Get off the tracks, man. You're on the tracks, man. Hey, get off the tracks. I'm yelling. It's the train's pulling up. I can now see like the lights of the train. The lights are getting closer and closer and closer. Train's getting louder, louder, louder. I'm screaming. Now I'm screaming like a crazy person because I also don't want to run out and get hit by the train because I have to run across and go to a – like I'd probably get hit by the train at this point. And the train gets close, like so close, so close. Like it's about to kill him, about to run him over. The thing was, it wasn't going to completely like run him over. He was like just so close to where it was going to smack him. Right. The train was going to take him with him. And I don't know, like he opened his arms up. Like, have you ever seen that Jesus statue in Brazil?
Yeah. Yeah.
He opens his arms up like that. And right as that's happening, the light hits him. So at this point, like I could see everything and he had no hair, but it was a person. It looked like a person, but I just saw it for like a glimpse. But when it was that glimpse, it was like, I took everything in. Like I just saw everything. He opened up his arms and he threw the bottle before he opens up his arms and everything. Now I'm like trying to piece everything back, but he threw the bottle, opens up his arms, train's coming, but it's like a second. And then he throws himself on the track. The train goes by, boom, runs him over. I'm thinking, like, at that point, I lost it. So at that point, I'm screaming, like, to the train. I'm yelling at the train, like, you guys ran somebody over. You ran, probably in English, too, in Argentina.
Yeah.
So everyone speaks Spanish, and they're hearing some American yelling, you guys ran somebody over. You ran somebody over. And the train stopped. So the train starts stopping, and it's slowing down. And for a train to slow down, it takes a little bit of time. So I start running to where the guy was, you know, to where, I don't know why. I thought, like, maybe he's still alive. Maybe I can pull him out. Maybe I can help this guy. And I remember I had a baseball cap on. I look under the train. And when I look under the train, it was like a tiny space. And I was expecting, you know, to see I should have known what I was going to see. Right.
Right.
I saw the shadow, cause it's dark. It's nighttime. I saw like a mangled, right, like a mangled body or a mangled person. I freaked out. I fell back. Right. So I look and I fall back onto the floor, and I start kind of like crawling back out of shock.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm probably like in shock. And I look away, cause it just looked crazy to me. I look away and I'm freaking out. And then I look back, and the guy is no longer mangled. Whatever that was under the train is now no longer mangled. So this is why I never tell this story, cause this is where it just didn't make any sense. So the body that I just saw that was mangled, that I didn't make out, you know, like I just saw a dark figure that was all twisted. It was no longer mangled. It was like crouched under the train, which made no sense because it wasn't large enough to crouch under the train. Like the space between the track and the bottom of the train was so small that there was no way a human being could fit and do that. First of all, he should have been dead. And it was a glint. It was a second. It was like, I saw whatever that was now kind of like something crouched under the train. And then it ran out the other side.
What?
So, yeah, at that moment, I'm thinking, dude, you just lost your mind. You literally just lost your, like, you lost it.
Did you see what happened? Like, what it was that ran out of the side? Like, when it came out of the side?
When it came out of the side, it was crazy. It was like, I just saw, like the feet running away, like, from the other side. I saw it, like, scurry. Yeah, I saw it scurry out from under the train, but it was... Like I said, when I went to look under the train, it was dark. So I saw the body or whatever. And then I fell back from shock thinking, why did I look at this? You know, I freaked out like, dude, it's disgusting. And when I look back, it was like something staring back at me. And then it ran out from under the train.
And then
I'm thinking,
was there anything underneath the train at that point afterwards?
No, there was nothing. There's nothing under the train now. So I'm thinking, dude, your mind just snapped. Something happened. You've lost your mind. Now you stop this train, and what? And I don't know. So much stuff was running through my head, and I was like losing it. I was kind of like freaking out, and there was still like nobody there. It was just a train, this road, and as that's happening, a cop comes off the train, thinking like, "What is wrong with this kid screaming to stop the train?" And I'm like. You guys ran some. I kept saying the same thing. There's a guy. You guys ran a guy over. There's a guy under the train. You guys ran a guy over, but the guy was gone. But I was still like in shock. So I was saying like, you guys ran somebody over. And the cop goes to where I was pointing, and there's nothing there, obviously. And I'm like, no, I swear, there was somebody. Somebody was there a second ago. You guys ran somebody over, and. At that, you know, it was crazy because at that moment I'm saying that it's all dark. There's like along the tracks, it's all kind of like I think now they fixed it up, but it used to just be dirt, right? It was like the tracks, a bunch of dirt and darkness behind buildings. It was like the train ran through between buildings and stuff. So,
right.
But it was open. So a lot of homeless people did sleep back there. So at that moment I'm yelling, I'm telling the cop, like, no, like, you guys ran somebody over. And the cop's getting angry. And the cops in Argentina, you really don't want to messed with the cops in Argentina. So he's getting kind of like frustrated with me. And this homeless guy comes out of like the darkness with a, here they have this thing called Changuito. It's like a cart that they collect boxes and recyclable stuff in the cart. And the guy's pulling the cart and he's going, the homeless guy behind me is like, I had to realize, piece this all together after the situation, but the homeless guy behind me was saying in Spanish, like he was like praying and saying like, no, yeah, like, Dios mío, like somebody was under the train, el chico no está mintiendo. What? He was saying like, the kid's not lying. And I was like, he just kept going. He left, the homeless guy. But as that's all happening, I'm thinking I'm going to go to jail. I just stopped the train. Yeah. The train conductor gets off the train and he comes like angrily walking towards me. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to say like, why the hell did you stop the train? And he goes, where's the guy?
You're kidding me. You're kidding me.
No. And that's when I literally, I'm telling you, like, imagine my brain was
Oh my God.
On overload. And when he said, where's the guy that threw himself on the track? My brain just snapped. Dude,
my heart is beating right now. That's crazy.
It's a strange story. And I hate telling it because
it shouldn't. I mean, it's incredibly weird, but
that's what I'm saying. It's incredibly weird. And the guy's yelling at the cop, the train conductor's like, the kid's not lying.
Wow.
Somebody threw themselves on the track. Now, where's the guy that threw himself under the track? And the cop looks under the thing with his, the train with his flashlight. And I'm just like grabbing my head, walking around in circles.
Oh my God.
And the guy goes, they're like, there's nothing here. And the train conductor's super mad. And he's like, I saw something. Somebody threw themselves on the track.
Oh my God.
Right as the train was pulling up. We talked for like two more seconds, but there was all these people waiting on the train, especially like I was doing all that and people were staring from all the windows of the train or I don't remember. There's, you know, now when I try to piece it back together, it's happened like so long ago. And I don't know, like it was so crazy. Cause like after that happened, train conductor gets back on the train. The train starts to leave. And it was just like, okay, what happened? Like I had to then walk from there to the bus stop alone in the dark. And I was thinking, what did I just see?
Yeah. How do you explain that to people?
Oh, I didn't. Yeah. I literally went home and I couldn't go to sleep. Like I just stayed awake trying to figure it out. The next day I called my wife now. She was my girlfriend at the time. And I told her the story and then I go, but this happened. And now I just can't figure it out. I don't know what happened. I can't piece this together. And that's just been that's just how it stayed forever. I tried to see if anyone else saw anything in that same location. I couldn't find anything. I don't know. It was just a weird story, but that's probably the strangest thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And it happened to me as an adult.
I've heard some crazy stories from people, but that's just, I mean, and I believe you, I believe you because you're a sincere person and you're trying to get to the bottom of things. And I've had incredible experiences, not like that, you know, in a whole different vein of experience, but geez, like, I mean, what amazes me, I mean, there's so many things about that story that interest me. One is the fact that he held his arms out and, you know, it was like this whole thing, this whole performance almost, or like a dramatic suicide.
Yeah.
And, you know, this homeless guy. But the thing that really gets me is the conductor saw it. That's what really gets me is the conductor saw it.
Yeah.
And the crawling away. And there's those three aspects, the crawling away, because like what I want to rewind back, because I know your memory is probably a bit fuzzy on this, so don't worry if you can't really recall it, but when you saw it crawl away, was it human size?
Yeah, that's why it didn't make sense.
I don't understand.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't make sense. It made no sense at all. So literally it was like, it was in like a crouched position that made no sense.
Yeah, and that's what I'm scurried. Trying to figure out.
It didn't, so it
was
like crawl.
Bent over. It was all bent over under the train.
It was like bent over. It kind of reminds me, when I think about it, this is going to sound so ridiculous. It reminds me, it reminded me of like a crab. You know how crabs move?
Oh, a crab, right. Yeah, yeah.
You know how a crab moves?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like scuttles to the side.
Exactly. It scuttered out from under what? The train.
So then, not like a human. It didn't act like a human.
It did not act like a human, no. That whatever that was, if that was actually still, I don't even know. You know what I mean? That's the whole problem with it. It's like, after that experience happened, imagine trying to like process it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I couldn't say anything to anyone.
Of course.
It was just like, I had to just, yeah. I made a video about the story on my channel. But like, other than that, I probably tell this story a handful of times. Well, and then there'll be moments where like, people are like, so what happened to you? You know, what are experiences that you've had? And I'll completely forget the story. I'll completely like not bring it up just because I feel like my brain is like, do not tell that story.
Yeah.
We don't know what it is. Do not talk about that. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like I said, I've had my own experiences. They're not in the same, not the same type of thing at all, but I'm very selective, other than talking about them on my channel, which I don't mind doing, but I'm very selective in my personal life about who I tell my stories to, because they are ridiculous. Like, you know, to people who are not, to people who are not initiated to this in any way and educated in any way on the topic. I mean, you know about some of my experiences, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen some of your videos. I'd love for you to tell me though, like your favorite, like an experience that maybe changed your whole look on reality.
Yeah, it's the first time I saw the orange orbs. It was, I mean, and this was on the 24th or 25th of August, 2019. And, you know, before this point, I'd been going out into my garden a lot. And I don't know if you've ever tried it, but I've been going out into my garden a lot and, you know, getting into a very calm state of mind. You know, people call it C5, and it's a bit controversial because they connect it with Stephen Greer immediately. And even though I do support Stephen Greer in a few of the different things he's doing, I get why he's controversial. And I think what I want to highlight before I jump into this, and most people listening who, you know, listen to my channel know this already, but anyone new, Stephen Greer doesn't equal C5 or consciousness contact. And he didn't invent it. He's popularized it, and that's brilliant. But you know, whatever your opinions are on Stephen Greer, reserve them for a moment, because this is not, I'm not using his protocols. So anyway, I was out in the garden. I just wanted to highlight that first of all, but I was out in the garden and, you know, before I had this major contact, I had been calming my mind, getting into a very meditative type of state, just through some very gradual, slow breathing. And once I'm in that kind of state of mind, and practicing meditation helps, which I don't do as often as I should, but I do it as much as I can. But basically, getting into a calm state of mind and just being very clear and coherent with my thoughts and modeling them around the desire to make contact with something that can perceive these thoughts. And so I'd be doing that in my head and essentially just visualizing in some way that was being projected out into the universe. Because I've been doing research, even though it was very layman, I've been doing research into kind of consciousness and also quantum mechanics and different concepts, both from like a spiritual side and then a scientific side. And for me, the idea of initiating a type of contact was quite an easy thing to jump into once I found out it was something that was, you know, talked about within the community. And yeah. So I know this is a long-winded story, but I want to give the good background to it.
Now, I want to hear it though. Tell.
All right. Yeah. So so the first things that I was seeing over the first few weeks and months of doing this type of contact was I was seeing a lot of white orbs. Now, a lot of people will attribute that to satellites, and I can understand that, but it's the frequency at which they would arrive and also the flashing of their lights, which that caught my attention. Because basically, you know, if you've heard of an iridium flare, these things occur once. They flash, they glow very brightly, and they flash, and then they recede back down, and then they, you know, they carry on their journey. But what I was seeing was white orbs coming over, sometimes like two or three within the same window of time coming over the sky, and they would glow very brightly and flash. And I would be like, wow, what's that? you know, that's amazing. And, you know, send a thought up like, are you here to see me? And see, and then there'd be another flash and then another flash. And it would seem to be in correlation to my thoughts. And so for the first few months, that was the kind of stuff that was happening, was I was getting these white orbs coming over in a frequency that was not common for satellites, and doing behavioral visual signatures that are just not common. You do not have, satellites do not flash over and over again as they traverse the sky. They just don't do that. And you can, my whole sky area is a flyover for airplanes, and they're very, very easy to distinguish, you know. So I know what, yeah, I'm seeing is not exactly normal. But this was going on, and then I was out in my garden and I was doing the same thing, clearing my mind, getting into a calm state, and the first thing I saw was a flash in the sky. And I've seen flashes, and this wasn't a white orb, it was just a flash in the middle of a dark bit of sky. And I've seen this before, and it does actually happen. In fact, one happened last night. These things are quite annoying because it's hard to catch on camera, you know? But I swear to God, if you go out and you just calm yourself down and you send some thoughts out, one of the first things that seems to be a common occurrence is what people in the community that do this is called flash bulbs. And you get this weird white flash that suddenly goes in the sky, and it happens over and over. And that's the first thing I saw this night. And I saw this flash and I looked up, and then it happened again in the same spot. And then it happened again and again, and it kept going maybe every second and a half, 2 seconds. And so I was looking up at that for, I don't know, maybe a few minutes, and it actually moved. It started to move down. It was flashing, and then the next time it flashed, it was slightly lower, next time slightly lower. And it did that until it stopped. And this is just from my perspective, and it could just be a coincidence, but it stopped in alignment with two other stars, and it kind of created like this equilateral triangle, and it just kept flashing. And I was just watching that because I'd never seen anything doing that kind of particular thing. So I was really just staring and saying thank you in my mind to whatever it was that was doing this. And then I just kept my, you know, staring around at the sky looking for other things, because stuff can happen at all directions. So you're always tilting your head around. But this was happening to the right-hand side of me. And I tilted my head to the left, and I'm standing at the back of my garden looking towards my house, and I'm looking up at the right-hand side of the sky. I'm seeing this flashing light. I turn around to the left, and I see this cloud, and it's dark. I mean, it's nighttime, and this cloud is dark, and I look at it, and I don't initially see anything, look down, and then I take another look, and you know, I sound like a broken record when I describe this, because it's literally the only way I can describe it, but it was like a staticky, almost fizzy cloud. It was weird. The moment I look back on it, I noticed that there was something not right with it. It was almost like it was highly agitated with energy. It wasn't like super clear, not like TV static, like, you know, it wasn't like in the sky, but the moment I looked at it properly, all of the little particles around the cloud seem to be kind of almost fizzy or poppy. And for anyone that has what I have, which is called visual snow, where when you look up at things like the sky, you see lots of little specks that are flashing and like kind of glinting. You'll know what I'm talking about, because that's what it looked like. And I was transfixed, because I'd never seen a cloud look like that before. And it was moving, just drifting across the sky. And so for perspective, again, I was at the back of my garden looking towards my house, and up at the left-hand side of the sky, this cloud was drifting from the left to the right. So it was going to basically go past my house and then continue on. And as it drifted past my house, and it was drifting like a normal cloud, but the way it looked was so weird. And it was, like I said, fizzy or agitated, slightly staticky, slightly charged. And it was drifting across. As it got in alignment with my house, and literally in alignment with me, because I was on this path that kind of goes a straight line down to my house. So it was like it got to my house, and as it was lined up, it literally did a right angle turn and started moving towards me, not down towards me, but across the sky in my direction, which was the complete 90 degree turn from where it was originally going. And at that point, my heart really skipped a beat, because even though I was out there doing this for that kind of reason, what I was seeing, I did not know what that was. And it was scary. Yeah. You know, a little bit of me was like, holy shit, what is this? And it drifted over, it got above my head, and if I was to guesstimate, I would say, I don't know, I don't want to guess because I have no idea, like in terms of hundreds of meters up, but it wasn't like it was extremely low down, it was quite high up in the sky, and it got above me and literally melted away. It just dissipated in a matter of a second and a half. It just kind of went and just faded away, and inside it was a triangle formation of like 25 or 30 orange orbs of light, like literally a perfect triangle formation, and it just continued going across the sky as it was, but it was now just this triangle of orbs, and some of them I could literally see them. My mouth was just open, and I could literally just see some of these orbs were weaving in between each other, and it just traversed across the sky until I couldn't see it anymore. And that's my first time. That changed everything.
Yeah, I could imagine that would change everything. I mean, how do you come back from that? That's what I'm saying.
You can't. And the thing is, you know, for me, the prerequisite for that, the thing that happened before that, was I was trying to consciously initiate a contact. And, you know, I am not a scientist, and I can't debate it with scientists. And there are some people who obviously, you know, within the scientific community that genuinely are researching and studying and putting forward the idea that consciousness is non-local and can interact outside of the body.
Yeah. But
it's still so controversial, and I get a lot of flack in the community sometimes from people who are more scientifically minded, and it's very frustrating because I understand their frustration. But for me, something happened, and the only way it could have happened is if it was a response to my, you know, my thoughts. And the reason I say that is because I had more experiences, you know, they turned up more times.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that we're talking about this now, because I had so many questions I want to ask you about CE5, because I've experimented with, obviously we're not talking about like Stephen Greer or anything, but I've experimented myself, you know, because of what I saw.
Yeah.
And because of what I saw online of people using this and trying to, you know, make contact with it. So I've tried to do it. Two times. The first time nothing happened. Second time around, somebody had commented, like, I think I made a video about it. So somebody had commented like, you have to like be open and clear your mind and be open to making contact. Like you have to make, like, be open to peaceful, you know, like not be afraid, not be doubting yourself and all this stuff. So the second time I did it, I was alone in my house, and I walked up, but I'm in the middle of the city too. So I was just experimenting. So I walk up to the building, the roof of the building after I did it. I did it like the super cheesy way too. I like listened to the Stephen Greer, what is it? He's got like that.
Yeah. He's got like a contact meditation.
Yeah.
Series.
Yeah. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to listen to it, whatever. So I go up on my roof, and I'm looking up at the sky, like right above, like above my head. And I had my camera with me and stuff. And like you said earlier, I should have known that, like, if anything did happen, it would be impossible for me probably to catch it unless I was just like staring through my lens the whole time. But, I was looking up at the sky without my camera, without using my camera, and I was seeing the stars and stuff, and I didn't see anything really happening. Right. So I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe it didn't work again. And I lower my vision and I look straight ahead. And the crazy thing is, it's kind of low, like what I'm looking at, right? It's not that high in the sky. And I see something like a blue flash.
Right.
Go up into the, you know, like shooting stars, they go across the sky.
I've seen similar things.
This was like a blue flash that was close.
Yeah.
Like not too far at all, not too high at all. And it was just a flash that went up into this, like up. I don't know how to explain it. It was like a backwards,
like a reverse shooting star. I was literally about to say the same thing. Yeah, reverse shooting star, but a blue one.
But a blue one. And it was 1 second. And I was like, no. And I was like, I had my camera in my hand. I remember. Yeah, because I had my camera in my hand. I was like, oh no. I was like,
of course.
Of course. Yeah, of course it's going to happen. But then I went downstairs and I finished the video, and I said, you know, I told the story, and I said, look, it's strange that would happen, that I would see anything when trying to use my consciousness or trying to clear my mind and use my mind to make contact. It is very strange that I would see anything at all like that.
Yeah.
you know.
Well, this is the thing is I, you know, I don't pretend to be able to explain the whole thing. I have some ideas and some theories, but the thing is it worked. And I think that a lot of it does come down to intention and belief in your own abilities. If you don't think you can do this, then you're not going to be capable of it. And I think that that's, it's a dangerous road to go, because some people might be like, well, you know, if you believe you can you fly? And it's like, well, let's not jump too crazily into these things. But at the same time, something's happening. There's more than just one person, i.e. me, i.e. you've just had an experience as well, but many, many other people have had these experiences when it comes to initiating contact. And there are groups that do it. And it's not just, you know, Stephen Greer. There are lots of other groups out there that do this kind of thing. And, you know, the thing is, when it comes to consciousness, it's a word that's thrown around to explain things sometimes without much thought put into it. And I don't want to use the word consciousness irresponsibly. But I do feel we lack sufficient language to adequately explain what's going on here. And I think it's a term we can use here, because consciousness, or more specifically awareness, like the I am-ness of life, without which we wouldn't exist. You know, this property of awareness, in my opinion, does extend beyond the physical body. It is not contained or generated within the brain. Consciousness, in my opinion, is a field. And this field is, by all means of explanation, boundless. You know, it's like it's the... With it, I know it sounds a bit mystical for some people, but it's like the infinite sea of potential and manifested energy. We're both comprised of it and submerged within it. Our physical forms could almost be seen as like crystallized points of consciousness floating in an ocean of coherent energy. But each of these beings, each of these points of consciousness, is subsequently like connected to each other via this field of energy that permeates through and, in my opinion, gives rise to the physical universe. You know, so, I mean, you have this, you know, you have this component, this aspect of awareness that allows for non-local interaction. And these interactions can take a variety of forms, like remote viewing and different ESP abilities that people have looked into. And it is this non-local aspect of consciousness that is applicable towards some form of communication with some aspect of the phenomenon. Like my own experiences, yours and other people have reinforced, and, you know, especially mine, have reinforced this for me on a subjective level. You know, I can't argue with a PhD physicist who claims non-locality is impossible. I can't argue with them, like I said before, because I lack that level of expertise or education in the discipline, but I've had personal experiences which are not possible without some form of non-local interaction between the thoughts in my mind and whatever decides to show up.
Yeah, I agree. And I loved the whole breakdown you just gave there. All the words.
Thank you.
The way you present, like you explained that just now, because I feel like you have a good understanding of it. So whenever I hear you express yourself passionately about it, I'm like, yeah, totally. I get it. I hear other people try to explain it and I'm like, I don't know. You know what I mean? But, I do believe that consciousness plays a huge role in the phenomenon, a huge role, right? And a huge role in everything. You know, I have said this before, but like, what do you think of the ancient astronaut hypothesis?
In regards to what? In just in terms of they've been here in ancient times, or Anunnaki and that kind of theory?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't need to get into like Anunnaki and stuff like that. But, you know, if we're going to think about, if we're going to talk about consciousness, right? And yeah, we're going to think that there's obviously a link between the UFO phenomenon and consciousness. And if we look at how the phenomenon has gone back so many years, and it seems like it's been interacting with us, like I said earlier, since the beginning of history, the idea that these beings could be, these beings or this phenomenon could have influenced the concept of gods, and the concept of gods would be what influenced religion, which is what led to which is what led to meditation and prayer, and this idea of like being in touch with an outside source or an outside energy. It's weird how it's all connected if you think about it, you know.
Well,
that's something. Like, I feel like C5 and this idea that we can use our consciousness to contact these beings, right? Or this, this phenomenon. I feel like it adds a bit of credence to sort of this, not that it's a religion or it's like a religious thing, right? But I feel like
that is like, bigger than just ETs.
It's big. No, I don't know if it's, it might just be ETs and we're just not big enough to,
right, to comprehend them,
to comprehend it. Yeah. So we turn them into gods.
Well, if you, if you subscribe to what Jacques Vallée, you know, believes, then you're looking at a, essentially like an omnipresent force that has the ability, even though it's essentially non-local and everywhere, has the ability to manifest in a variety of forms for a variety of reasons. I mean, that's essentially, I believe, his way of seeing it, is that it's an all-encompassing force that is in of itself manifesting different phenomenon to present to us in different ways for different reasons.
Yeah. Well, there. Exactly. That's what I was trying to say, basically. But have you ever wondered how that kind of, you know, the power of intention and the power of the human mind, how that might have played into why in the past, I feel like thousands of years or hundreds of years ago, right? Human beings were not as distracted as they are now.
Yeah.
So they were much more connected with whatever that is, with whatever that oneness is. So when they would sit and meditate and they would sit and pray, they actually believed it. You know, they were actually doing it with the right intentions. And imagine, I don't know,
they were also taking a lot of psychedelics, you know, and you know, it's one of these things that's almost just as, if not more controversial than the UFO topic, because, you know, these are the shamanic roots of pretty much every single human being when you go back far enough to the point where we're in tribalistic nature. And there are, of course, still tribes out there right now that are either uncontacted or just still adhere to their old traditions, like in the Amazon basin, where you have, you know, these tribes that are still taking ayahuasca, which is the, you know, psychedelic brew that they use to induce shamanic and visual states. And it's actually been proven to be actually a very effective medicine, and for a variety of reasons, and it's becoming more popular in the West. But we in the West have completely separated ourselves for a long time, from the shamanic roots that we once came from. You know, especially, you know, look at my country, we were pagans, you know, we were pagan before we were Christian, and the pagans were tribal and they took magic mushrooms and they, you know, they had these very holistic practices. And, you know, we've drifted a very long way away from that in the Western culture. And if you look at things like the war on drugs, essentially, and I'm going to borrow from Graham Hancock here, it's a war on consciousness. You know, it's a war on consciousness, because if you don't have the freedom as an individual human being to alter your own state of consciousness, then you're not really free. And that's what he says. And I agree with him, because, you know, whether or not you agree with the usage of those substances, they are in of themselves a way to, in, you know, change consciousness. And we're not against, and I'm going to borrow from Graham again, because we're not against the, you know, the changing of consciousness states in the West. We like alcohol, we have cigarettes, we have coffee and sugar and all these different things that change our state of consciousness, but they don't really damage the coherent state of consciousness that allows for kind of mundane tasks. And, you know, they don't challenge the status quo. They don't challenge what's going on. But if you take a psychedelic, it challenges pretty much everything you've ever believed in. And so I think that, you know, when you look at some of the cultures around the world that still allow for these substances, and I'm not speaking for all drugs, I'm just saying that, you know, you've got these plants that have, you know, existed with us, that we've grown with these different herbal plants and different things that we've used, and they have actually, you know, in of themselves, and it's evident through so many different artworks, they have in of themselves attributed to culture in a huge way. And so I think, you know, you're looking at, when it comes to the West, to get back to the original point, you're looking at such a bifurcation, such a separation of spirit, of what we would call spirit, you know, and it's been replaced with concrete dogmas and solidified religious rules, and you know, it's not what it should, it's not what it's supposed to be. And you know, there will be people who disagree with me, of course, but this is my opinion. I just feel it very strongly about the fact that we've wandered so far away from it. And if you look at the technocratic society we're in, such a technologically addicted society, and yet so far away from empathy and consciousness and collective empathy. You know, we care about a few small select people around us, but we don't care enough to solve the biggest issues in the world, especially the most, you know, powerful people in control. So we've got real problems in the West in terms of a separation of spirit and a connection to the earth. And I think that plays so hugely into people digging their head into the sand about the UFO phenomenon, about phenomenon in general in terms of unexplainable things, and also delving deep into consciousness with substances that grow naturally on this planet that seem to challenge the reality we're in, that most of us can acknowledge is fucked up. Most of us can acknowledge that this is not actually how we're supposed to be running the planet, and yet people are still aggressive towards things that have grown from this planet that actually kind of force you to challenge your own worldview and change your way. So I think that, you know, this is a facet. Obviously, the psychedelic substances is just a facet of something. It's a tool that can be used. It's not the be all and end all and the solve problem, but it's something that we used once that attributed to our spiritual growth that we have now walked away from. And I think that, you know, we're seeing a resurgence of it in the West. You're seeing cannabis coming out, you're seeing psilocybin starting to come out in different areas. And in fact, even in my country, Imperial College London is, you know, researching DMT, dimethyltryptamine. I've probably pronounced that really wrong. But you know, we're moving into an era, I feel, of a weird melding of technology and maybe some spiritual stuff, because these things are starting to come in and we are starting to become a bit more spiritually minded. You know, a lot of younger people, if they do have any sort of spiritual inclination, it's less likely to be of a fundamental religion and more likely to just be like an open, oh, I'm a spiritual person, you know. You've got more open people to this. And so I personally can't remember what the initial question was to this. I don't know if you can.
Yeah, no, you went in the right direction.
I just went off on a tangent. I do that.
No, don't worry. It's this is the fireside chat.
It's the fireside chat.
It's awesome.
I haven't got any marshmallows.
Yeah, I was thinking that'd be funny if I grabbed a pack of marshmallows or something.
Right.
But I was saying basically what you were saying is a part of what I was saying, just that I feel like earlier in the past, human beings were just more open. So like anytime, like imagine somebody trying to practice making contact with what they thought, you know, was whatever it was, right? Making conscious with this phenomenon, right? Making contact with this phenomenon during a time where their consciousness was just more, it's just higher.
Open.
You know, it was more open, right? They believed it when they were sitting there praying to the sun gods. They believed the sun god was real.
Yeah.
You know, they believed all those things. And if today we can make contact using our consciousness, imagine what that would have been like in a time where, you know, they had no distractions and nobody telling them, hey, okay, you can believe it, but just know, like, like a lot of religious people are religious because it's like a good thing. It's good for them, right?
Yeah, of course.
They're, you know, through their life and stuff like that. But they don't really like believe 100% that there's like physical angels flying around and stuff like that. But I feel like a long time ago they did. When they had the intent to sit and pray and they had the intent to open up their consciousness, they might have actually been able to make contact. And those, you know, the stories we read from around the world, these stories that sound like fables, may have actually been somehow these people were making contact with something because they were on a whole nother level than us, that we can't do it. And like, we can't do it anymore, really. Other than people that really can get to that level and are open, like yourself, you know what I mean? But imagine a whole group of you doing the same thing. Imagine if there was 50, 100 of you outside just sitting in the field without technology, without anybody to tell you like, to, you know, say like, okay, well now you have to feel like you have to be open to this. No, you're like automatically open because that's what you believe. It's what you know. imagine what they were coming into contact with. That's something I've thought about a bunch.
Well, like, you should go over to Isetti Ranch, man, and I'll join you, because if you haven't heard of that place, that's a place to go.
Definitely. I'd love to go do that. You know, that's one thing is like my experience that I had with C5 was very small in comparison to other people's experiences. Like for me, it was awesome, but I was just like,
Have you gone out much more?
No, that's the thing. Because I'm in the city, I've always felt like I should go somewhere like a little more rural to try to do it. And I don't know, like I've tried it another time with my brother and nothing happened, but we were just like, I was just like, hey man, let's try this. And he was like, okay, whatever. And we tried.
Yeah. But that's the thing is I'm not an expert on this in any way whatsoever. I'm only giving my personal feelings on it, but cause I've had times where I've gone out and I've really felt like I was in the right mindset and nothing's happened. Yeah. And then I've realized actually, I was more focused on, oh, are they going to turn up yet? When are they going to turn up? Or I hope they do turn up. Will they turn up? Or, and that's going on in my mind in the background. And if that's going on, I think you've already stopped it from happening, because I think that you're dealing with really subtle vibration, really subtle frequencies and changes in consciousness. Mm-hmm. And if you're not actually in that coherent intention, if you're not actually clear and you're not present and there is actually some background noise going on, then the signal's going to be worse, if not completely non-existent. And so, that's just a theory, but it's based on the fact that some of the more awesome things that I've seen have been when I have like really felt, yeah, I'm 100% plugged into what I'm doing right now. And I'm also not expecting anything. I'm just being open and I'm just saying, if anything's there, to come and say hello, instead of kind of like waiting for the things that I've already seen before to turn up, or go, oh, will the orange orbs turn up again? Will I ever see that again? Instead of doing that, filling your mind up with expectations, it seems to be when you just get yourself into that really calm, non-expectant state. Like I was saying before about like the I am-ness of life, like the awareness, mm-hmm. like that's like the baseline. You know what I mean? Like on top of all of that, you've got like your day-to-day worries and your reptilian monkey brain that's chatting along and chatting and saying stupid shit. But underneath all of that, there is just this baseline of being aware with no thoughts attached to it, just the awareness of being aware. And that's what you're trying to get to through meditation. And that's also what you're trying to get to when you're going out and doing this type of thing, is you want to try and it might seem like it's a weird thing to obtain, but it's not. You actually in some way feel it when it happens. It's like you just realize without really thinking that you're not thinking. It's a hard one to kind of translate in words, but through feelings, which are a lot easier to articulate for someone when they feel them, they'll understand what I'm talking about.
Like you're in the pocket.
Yeah. A friend of mine actually says it similar to that. And it's exactly like that. And I think that's really important. I think that it's because it's just kind of like getting back in tune with just being awake, alive. And if you can do that, especially if you've got a really busy mind, if you can do that, it's actually pretty powerful, man. Like it can really help in your life. It's not just about this very, very small facet of making contact with some unknown phenomenon. Like this is just good advice for your life. If you can get yourself each day 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening to be completely silent, especially in the morning, because I think it gears you up for your day correctly. Like when you're in that kind of a bit, when you have that ability to stop all the chatter in your mind, and if you can do that as a practice in the morning, I find that it genuinely echoes off into the rest of your day and things don't bother you as much, or you don't find yourself getting as stressed. I remember I was doing this when I was working a job that I thought I would never work in my life, and trust me, I would never do again. Which was, and people, please don't judge me. I was an insurance guy, like in an office, like, you know, and this was like, I think I was there for like
It
6 months.
happens to all of us.
Oh yeah. You know, and like the pay was the pay. I just moved to where I am now, Nottingham City. And the pay was enticing and I needed to pay rent. And so I jumped into it and it was the worst job I've ever done in my life. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy because it was just a stressful place for someone like me. You know, before that, to give you some perspective, before that, I was a climbing instructor, a rock climbing instructor. So it's a really not my space being in an office.
It's a big leap, man. Say the same thing happened to me. Like
Yeah,
I
yeah.
work in an office, so I know how that feels.
Yeah,
It's
dude. Well,
hard.
I was in there. So I think at one point during my time in there, I'd like really got into like looking at the CIA Freedom of Information Act library. And I was like pinging work colleagues' emails with like, hey, did you know the CIA was looking into like psychic spies and all this stuff? And like, check out the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences. And everyone was like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? And so I remember I actually quit that place quite flamboyantly. I just put down my headset and walked out. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I just put my headset down and I walked out and I threw my staff card in the bin and I never went back. And but you know, it's like I don't remember why I was telling that story, but it's one of those things where you end up in an environment with people that are just not the people you're meant to be around. And it was a good learning curve for me. Oh yeah, the reason I was telling that story is because I was doing meditation each morning and that was genuinely helping me get through that hellhole of a job. But even the meditation wasn't strong enough and I had to leave.
Wasn't strong enough. No, but I totally have, like, I've always been curious about meditation because, like I said, I've always been curious about consciousness and how it affects reality, how the mind can really affect reality. Because even, what do you think about the occult? Like, I believe that if the occult is real, if magic and practicing magic and those kinds of things are real, I believe it's the intention that makes it real. I believe it's, and I think that if, let's say, this idea of occult practitioners and a magic and all this kind of stuff, it's been passed on from the gods, kind of from prayer and from paganism and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It might be like literally the phenomenon somehow explaining to people how to use their consciousness to bend or manipulate reality. I don't know. It's something I've always thought about. I'm like, I always feel like there's a tie between the occult and the UFO phenomenon. I can't find it. I can't put my thumb on it,
Well, I'll
but
tell
I feel
you
like
what.
there's a tie there.
I'll tell you what, someone that you need to speak to is my friend Jean on Twitter. I'll have to hook you up because
Definitely.
he's the guy when it comes, because he's been looking into like the Freemasons and all these different secret societies, but he's found a lot of stuff that correlates to the UFO phenomenon. And like for me personally, yeah, I mean, I would, you know, without getting too fantastical with it, I would take the occult pretty seriously. Like, I mean, I don't know what's really possible. You know, I've had my own possibilities expanded exponentially from my own experiences. Like my own idea of what's possible increased a lot in the last few years. But I mean, when it comes to the occult, I think one thing to recognize is there's a lot of very quite well connected occult societies throughout time, very, you know, prominent families and royal connections, and there's a lot of power and influence connected to some of these groups, and that echoes through time. So I would say that there is a good reason to take this serious. I mean, we're not I wouldn't really maybe not classify Freemasons entirely as the occult, but there is definitely some behavior within that is suggestive of knowledge of the occult and knowledge of different types of almost forbidden forbidden knowledge that's being kept secret. And there's all sorts of groups doing that.
100%. Have you heard the story of Aleister Crowley?
I've heard a few different stories from the friend that I was just mentioning, but you go ahead and tell me.
No, the what was it called? Lem, or Lem, which is like a time. I don't remember the story in detail. But he basically used a ritual to summon this entity that people believe it might actually be Crowley. Like Crowley did a depiction of it, and it looks like an alien gray,
Yeah, the weird alien
right?
thing.
Yeah. And they're thinking maybe it's like his, like a reflection of himself. But I thought it was super interesting when I saw the depiction of it. And I mean, if we're going to start thinking about the mind and what the mind can do, I don't see why we can, you know, contact the phenomenon. But basically there he's bringing out like an entity from a portal, right?
Yeah, and that's like, a whole other level.
It's a whole nother level. But who knows? You know, that's literally, it's the rabbit hole I've gone down so many times. Wait,
like, what's the guy that ran Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard? You know, him and Crowley would go out into the desert and do these weird masturbation rituals and stuff. Yeah. Right? Like, you're crazy. And weirdly enough, like, these people tie into the founding fathers of NASA and, you know, some of the initial people that started, you know, JPL and stuff like that. Yeah. Jack Parsons.
Jack Parsons' story.
Yeah, man. This is a rabbit hole right here.
Yeah.
We're on the edge of a rabbit hole.
Yeah. I'm saying, like, if that was the problem, was like, I started thinking like, okay, so consciousness plays into this, and then consciousness plays into all these things they're doing. So how is this tied together? And also, how come they're like summoning things in the desert and, you know, bringing out entities. And if you find like a grimoire and you open up a grimoire and you look, there's this grimoire, I can't remember what it's called. It's got these depictions in it of different demons. And if you think about like what a person would think what a demon was, if you saw a gray a long time ago before you knew it was a gray, there's no way you're not going to think it's not a demon.
Yeah, because it's so different. You know what I mean? And it's humanoidish. So you'll probably be like, oh, it's some evil type of creature.
Yeah, with giant black eyes.
Yeah.
Communicating. So I started trying to like make a link there and try to figure it out. But I feel like it's a rabbit hole that it's a deep one.
It is a deep one. But that's the thing with this subject. There are so many of them. And you have to be careful because not every rabbit hole is worth jumping down. That one, exactly. I think, is, I mean, there's a talk on my channel. If you haven't seen it, I'll send you a link and people listening, you can check it out in the channel. It's from Peter Lavender, you know, the guy that helped co-write the books of Tom DeLonge, or at least one of the books of Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
It's his presentation on the secret space program, but it's not the secret space program like, you know, crazy reverse engineered craft. He's talking about the origin story of things like NASA and JPL, but the origin story that people don't know about, which is this more weirdly occult and, you know, connected to these strange unknown religious foundations and churches and all of these weird people and places and institutions that were connected in the origins of NASA and the building blocks of the space programs. And so that's worth checking out because he's, you know, he has done his research. This is something that he specializes in. He specializes in the occult. And, you know, that's his forte, man. And I would recommend, if you haven't listened to it, to check out that presentation because it's weird.
I will, definitely. I mean, like, I did a whole video on Jack Parsons. I remember finding his story and then just like I was so fascinated because it's just like, how did they not teach me this in school? How come nobody told me that one of the founders of that these occult practitioners are like so rooted into something that's gonna take us to the new frontier, or that did take us to the new frontier, but next thing you know, me and you might be alive.
Also Nazis.
And Nazis, you know,
a shit ton of Nazis, occult practitioners, and Nazis built the space program, and that is a cold fact.
That's like 100% all occult 100%.
Practitioners. You look at the high-ranking Nazis, and you go into the Vril and all these crazy things, and the different groups, and you know, this is it. This is what I'm saying. It's a rabbit hole because the occult ties into the UFO phenomenon in ways in which are bizarre. And I tell you, like I said, you'll have to speak to my friend. I'll hook you up. You'll love it. He'll fascinate the hell out of you.
Definitely. No, I love when I meet somebody that's really well versed in the occult, because I feel I always have these questions, but like you said, it's a rabbit hole that I've always been like, no, don't go down that rabbit hole. You know, the night before I had that experience that I saw the thing under the train.
Yeah,
I kept this to myself for a very long time, this part of the story. because I remembered it after. The night before, I had been looking into this. I made this connection that we just talked about now. I was looking into UFOs. I started thinking about the ancient astronaut hypothesis. I started thinking, well, maybe the gods were, you know, aliens, and they taught us how to use our consciousness, and that's what spawned the occult. So let me look into the occult. So I started looking into the occult that same night. And I remember I was looking into the grimoire, and I was thinking, well, if people can contact, you know, if you can contact the phenomenon with your mind, then can I, like, is it the same as summoning something, you know, like summoning an entity?
Yeah.
Right. So I, like, I don't know. I was like Googling, like, such a nerd trying to figure it, you know, but like, I'm not a real occult. I don't know anything about the occult really. Like, I'm not a practitioner, but I was like, I need to find something that I could read. Like, let me find like a spell or something, you know? So I'm looking through the grimoire. I'm looking at like some, I don't remember what it's like, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, I think, or something like that. But I read some stuff. And I remember I don't remember now what it was. But I remember reading some stuff and just reading it out loud in my house. I lived alone at that time in Argentina. I had this, like, it's my parents' apartment. And they weren't like here. They were still living in the States. So I had this big apartment. I'm like walking around with my dog in my house, like with a book or with some printed papers. And I'm like reading the printed papers, walking around my house. And I'm thinking, is this stuff like, would this ever work? And I'm like, no. And I'm like reading it out loud. And I throw the paper away. I think I actually like ripped up the papers and threw them in the trash. Not out of anger or anything. I was just I got to go to bed. And I just like ripped it up and threw it away. And the next day, that thing, that weird experience happened. And it's something that I thought about way out. Oh, like,
okay.
I don't know if it has anything to do with it, though. Again, that story that I told you about the train, like, I don't know. I'll tell that story. You disrespected
the grimoire.
No, I don't know.
I'm messing with you, man.
I think it's weird, but I also think it's like, you know, it's me we're talking about here. Like, that'll probably happen any time of the week with me. Like, I might be reading something crazy. Like, I think I look at something weird and you know, high strangeness and stuff like that all the time. So,
but you always crumple it up.
But it's just a funny. No, I don't always crumple it up and throw it in the bin. I don't know why I did that. I think because I felt a little like what you just said, like I disrespected the grimoire. Yeah. Like, I was like kind of like not taking it seriously.
Maybe. You never know. I was reading it like superstitious.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's totally something that I think is super important, is like staying credible.
For sure, all the time. For sure.
So I really don't, you know, I have those two stories and I'm just waiting for somebody to hear my two stories and just rip them apart. You know what I mean? Somebody's going to hear them.
Well, look, plenty of people will want to rip that story apart, but I do believe it. And the thing is, plenty of people will want to rip it apart because people just don't, like, a lot of people just don't look into this stuff and they have a knee-jerk reaction and they're not ready. And, you know, I think you're a credible guy. I don't think you would lie about something like that. It sounds like a really insane story and it sounds like it happened to you. And I'm fascinated by it. I really appreciate you telling it because I know that you said it's, you know, it's not a comfortable story for you to tell. So I do appreciate you saying it and on record, because everyone else listening is probably going like, holy shit, that was a crazy story. And, you know, it's worth telling. And, you know, it's difficult to separate the phenomenon in terms of what's going on, because this all could be a spectrum. It could all be connected to each other. We don't know.
Yeah. But the thing was, too, is like that happened to me. And then really, I'm like 99% the UFO subject.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, there'll be moments, like I said, like I looked into, you know, Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons. I've looked into the missing 411 cases. Yeah. I've looked into Skinwalker Ranch and, you know, poltergeists and exorcisms and all this kind of stuff. But I still kind of keep coming back to the UFO phenomenon. And I feel like in between everything, I'm seeing this link of the human mind somehow playing into everything, consciousness somehow playing into everything. Now, what that is and what that connection is probably the most hard part to pin down. It's like the white rabbit. You know what I mean? It's
100%. It is the white rabbit.
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, it's the thing that seems to be at the center, and I've said this quote before, and I think it's relevant because it comes from Lou Elizondo, given to us by Jim Semivan at a book signing of, I think it was God's Man of War. And he said, he was talking to the camera crew, and he said, you know, my good friend Lou, he says, he thinks we will find the truth to this subject within the nexus of consciousness and quantum mechanics. You know, So there you go, because it's like, you know, you have this nuts and bolts aspect to the phenomenon of craft, and then you have this totally trans, you know, like just this totally strange trans normal consciousness perception phenomenon. And also I want to ask you with the orbs and things like that, because obviously that's it's different to physical craft, and it seems like we see orbs more often than physical craft, and I'm wondering what your opinion is on orbs and whether or not you think that they're all the same thing and what they are in general to you.
You know, I was actually going to ask you the same exact question.
Well, I'll give you my answer afterwards.
Okay. No, I think that we are dealing with, when we look at the UFO phenomenon, first of all, we see different types of craft, right? We see different types of beings. We see different kinds of interactions. And you have cases where people see light beings that turn into orbs. And you have cases where people see physical, you know, the gray, the common gray. Then you have, you know, mantis beings, all these different kinds of aspects. And then I think it's really interesting to look at the different shapes of the craft, and to try to think, you know, what each shape is. Does that mean that it's a different being or a different race or a different, maybe it's just another model, you know, one's the sports model, one's the everyday, the minivan.
Well, like,
you know,
we've got F-18s and we've got B-2 bombers and we've got all sorts of shapes.
Yeah, totally. So the orbs and the non-physical, I made a video trying to talk about this too, because I felt like, you know, the crash retrievals and all the articles that came out about the crash retrievals, and just the history that, like, Stanton Friedman talked about, you know, that there was this plan set out, like there's like a pamphlet that the government would use, like when there's a crash,
to
retrieve the pieces and all that kind of stuff. And then the crash retrieval article, and I keep coming back to this thought, and Roswell, this whole, you know, how is it that if it's a non-physical, like, I feel like there is a non-physical aspect to the phenomenon, so the orbs and all that aspect of it, but then there has to be like a physical aspect to it, which is like, so are they completely different, or are they somehow intertwined?
I think, you know, they both, like, think it's the same thing. I mean, when you talk about the Roswell crash, you know what Lieutenant McMillan revealed through his talk on the New York Post with Stephen Greenstreet. He had one of his sources who apparently, I can't, I'm kind of ruining this because I don't know the specifics. You might have to, if anyone's listening, you might have to try and track down the New York Post's interview with Lieutenant Tim McMillan. But he spoke about a contact of his that had given him information about the Roswell crash. Or I'm pretty sure it was the Roswell crash, forgive me guys. And basically the report that he had been given was that this craft appeared differently to different people.
Oh yeah, totally.
And
I mean,
and so you've got this physical craft that messes with perception.
That's weird, that's super crazy. But then, so then when you see the orb, can the orb turn into a physical craft? Is that what he's insinuating to?
Well, yeah, I mean we don't know.
But yeah, but then where does it stem from? Because I was thinking the same thing I was thinking. So like, so what if it is that, right? That something is messing with your physical perception. When it crashes and it explodes in the desert, why wouldn't it like turn back into whatever, you know, it originally was? You know, if it's just
maybe it wanted to be collected.
Oh, that's a great, I like that. That's a good one. That's a good one. Totally.
Yeah, man. Maybe it's a breadcrumb, and, you know, maybe like a carrot on a stick, we're being led into a type of, you know, what this, like, this just came to me as I was saying that last sentence, but maybe, and this is just a total hypothesis with no information or evidence backing it up. But imagine if we were being led down a forced route of technological improvement to a certain final point. that wasn't even our own will, but basically was being ushered forward by the insane technology that landed in our lap at a time where we didn't understand it. And like, imagine if for some reason unknown to us, we were just being led towards this weird technological evolution into something where we're now merging with AI. And this was all brought on by some crazy alien precursor, some weird artifact that they dropped down, and it just made us go into a technology frenzy.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually like, at the moment, like, we don't know why they're here, why they interact with us, where they're from exactly, right? If they're from another dimension or another reality, or if they've been here this whole time, you know, they're just, we just don't understand that we've been sharing the earth with them this whole time. And maybe it's their earth and not ours. But I do think that, again, see, I keep coming back to the ancient astronaut hypothesis, because if you look at religions, right, religions kind of set the forefront. They like set the rules for humanity.
Yeah.
No matter if you're religious or not, it kind of set the, it kind of helped to turn us from you know, violent animals into a little less violent animals.
Violent animals in the name of God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they gave us like rules, right? And then over time, I feel like a lot of people have lost faith in religion, or they just don't believe in the way, you know, like we were saying earlier, they did a long time ago. So now maybe, this is crazy because it's like people always say like, oh, you follow, or the UFO believers, it's becoming like a religion. I don't think that at all.
Not at all.
But I'm saying if it is the same phenomenon, it somehow has been like interacting with us and guiding us in the direction we've been going.
Well, so, a little thing that I just had a little thought about was, if they've been guiding us through interactions that stimulate society, and that original stimulus was the foundation for religions. And as you said, the way in which we have moved is further away from religion, which is the more common trend now. Technology is our new religion, and what is being shown to us? We are being shown absolutely out of this world technology. And at one point, we were being shown flaming spirals and strange phenomena. Like, you know, the ancient reports are not so common to be disc-shaped craft. And I just think that there's, I mean, there are some, you know, that's not a for definite, this, that's a generalization. There are some, but I just feel like perhaps if we're going to go down that route of we're being influenced for certain reasons, the next reason is this crazy technocratic influence of technology, 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 and this is what we're doing. This is what we are doing. Whether or not that's in response in some way to the phenomenon is a different question. But you know, it could be, we could be being influenced at a level we couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most interesting part of the phenomenon itself, or you know, this whole subject, is the relationship it has with us. I feel like that's the most, I also think that it may be like the reason why the phenomenon itself hasn't made contact with us, right? Like open contact. Like, it's not like they've come down and landed and said like, hey guys, stop using nuclear weapons. We're going to show you how to do that. Mm. You guys want free energy? Here's free energy. We know that you guys are crazy animals, but let's teach you how to not be crazy animals. Let's help you guys grow and get to the next, you know, the next level of evolution. I feel like it's the phenomenon itself wants to keep having this relationship with us where it's like kind of in the shadows.
Well, there is influences for that.
No, totally. I've said like, maybe it's that we're violent. You know,
yeah.
Like people always say, like, if the phenomenon wanted to like take you out, like if a UFO wanted to wipe you off the earth, or if the phenomenon wanted to get rid of us, it would. But I've said, like, what about like you put me in a jungle in a pack of gorillas, right? You can give me a gun. I might be able to kill one gorilla, but I'm not going to be able to kill all the gorillas if they're coming to get me. You know what I mean?
Well, there's that. And there's Yeah, I mean, there's also like the idea of a long game. I mean, you know, it's a kind of, it's it's a bit of a basic idea to imagine, oh, they can't be bad because they haven't destroyed the planet. It's like, well, or the human race in general. It's like, well, that's an oversimplification of an issue that is so far beyond the norm that you're putting it within a very normal box. And I just don't think, you know, and I'm not talking to you, I'm talking about just like an overall, you know, to people that say that stuff. It's just kind of, for me personally, I think that even though I don't really believe that there is like some kind of big evil malicious energy or race imprisoning us or anything like that, I don't think it's fair to say that because we haven't been destroyed or we aren't being directly visibly controlled or invaded that there isn't any sort of risk or threat, because, you know, there could be a long game manipulation going on. We don't know. There could be something that is playing out in a way that as a human you can't understand, a bit like, you know, it's a little bit like standing over an ant colony and looking over and watching them. And, you know, if you do that, you'll realize the ants don't know you're there. They don't know you're there. They don't. They until you stamp down on that thing, they don't have any idea you're there. And, you know, that could be a very similar thing to what we're experiencing, is we just cannot perceive it in the way that it is. And so... Yeah. It can manipulate us. And I'm not saying that's for definite, but I think that that's a genuine concern. It seems to be. I mean, you look at the ATIP slide, the slide 9, which I've kind of been mentioning a lot recently because I think it's important, is, you know, the idea of psychotronic weaponry and the manipulation of world leaders and decision makers. And this was on a DoD slide. So there is stuff going on that I think, you know, it's not so easy to simplify to they haven't destroyed us, so they must be good.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm a firm believer in that if you're going to look at this phenomenon in a logical way, you have to be intelligent and try to understand that, like, there's probably going to be good energy, like there's bad energy, there's going to be bad interactions, like there's good interactions, and that's just the way it's going to be. Yeah. You know, if they're intelligent, if there are somehow intelligent beings, they're going to have their own opinions and their own, I know it sounds weird to say that, but they're going to have their own thoughts on our species. Like there's going to be the kid that burns the ants with the, you know, with the magnifying glass, and the other kid that doesn't even bother, you know? So yeah, I agree 100% with you on that aspect.
Yeah.
And I just think that a lot of people do look at the phenomenon very closed-minded. I feel like it's something that you can't really put inside a box, and that really doesn't have boundaries, at least for the time being. But it is a bit unnerving to think that, like, it's just been interacting with us for so long. Like if we weren't important at all if we were just the ants, right, at the end of the day, like I haven't played with an ant or touched an ant unless it crawled on me, you know, but I haven't, done anything with the ants for a long time. But these beings are interacting with us all the time. It seems like people are coming into contact all the time, and not just, you know, with orbs, but people are supposedly seeing the grays and getting abducted and all this kind of stuff. People see them taking samples of, you know, of dirt and flowers and flying over nuclear bases and all this kind of stuff. There's some greater importance. I'm not even a big I'm not like a human that thinks that humans are the most magical thing in the universe. You know, I'm a guy that's like, I think we overly, like we think we're grandiose, like, because we basically created reality. Because
there's no one else to compare us to. So there's, you know, exactly. We only have ourselves to hold up in the universe right now. But, you know, in terms of the ant analogy, I was using it as a perspective of just distance and perception and our ability to see it. But in terms of our importance, I mean, it's obviously some deep interest in our species and whether or not it's like I was interviewing Dr. Michael P. Masters, and his theory is that some aspect of this phenomenon could be human. Humans traveling through time for a variety of reasons. I mean, what do you reckon of that? Do you think there's any possibility that, you know, future humans that have created a technology where they can come back through time are perhaps visiting us for different reasons?
Yeah. I mean, I remember a long time ago, I was like 12 or 13. And I said, like, I was just sitting, I don't know what I was doing. I was thinking about time travel. And I was like, okay, so if time travel exists in the future, I just remember this moment. I'm like, if time travel exists in the future, a million years from now, there could be time travelers here right now. And I remember I started like looking around like, oh no, there could be time.
Hey, well, it's like Robert Dean, you know, Robert Dean, the guy that apparently, you know, was in Shape headquarters and was like a NATO guy. And he was the one that said that he had been shown reports that detailed a lot of information about the UFO and the ET reality, as he was saying it, including the fact that some of these beings look exactly like us, and that one of the key concerns and worries of the people involved where he was at the time was that some of these beings could be walking down the corridors of SHAPE headquarters or the Pentagon or the Oval Office. And you know, this is the thing, is like, if we do, and there are so many reports of human, very mm-hmm. human-like, if not completely human-like beings. And so I think that there is some merit to the idea that some of these beings could look exactly like us. And if they do look exactly like us, then I think it's almost a guarantee that they're among us.
Oh yeah. That's like, I'm not a big believer in the humanoid, like the Aryan, that's what they're called, right?
You got me forgetting now.
No, I think it's
Nordic blondes and stuff.
The Nordic blondes. I was about to call them the Aryans.
Aryans. there is some belief that the higher up SS people based some of the Aryan characteristics off of those.
Exactly. So, I don't know. It's very possible, but I feel like if that's the case, if there are humanoid, they look just like us, then definitely they could be walking amongst us. So that, like, it wouldn't make sense that they wouldn't be.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, I think there, that's like a definite link between us and them. Now, is it that they're from the future and they're time travelers, or is it that we are made in their image? And
yeah, exactly. Well, this is the thing, we need answers. And I really hope that, you know, well, I kind of don't hope, I like, part of me actually doesn't hope that there is some information about that, because I would hate to think that information about something as important as beings that look exactly like us, very advanced within our society, I'd hate to think that was actually secreted away in a government, you know, skiff somewhere, and that information was there. I'd like to think that there is actually some level of ignorance, but I don't know. I mean, that's actually a good question, but I want to save it for a minute, just because I want to ask you, one, how are you doing for time?
I'm good. I'm fine.
Awesome. And I'm going to quickly put another coffee on. So I was just going to put the recording on pause, and then we'll jump straight back in with that question.
Okay. How long do you want to go for?
We'll just see how long we want to talk, man. I have to refuel a bit and get some coffee in me. It's just coming up to midnight. So I don't know, maybe another half hour or so. We'll see how we go. I'm enjoying it.
Awesome. Me too, man. I'm having a great time. I like this, the vibe of the fireside chat. I feel like more people in the community need to have, you know, ask questions. Cool. Everybody is very fact-based, and there's a lot of things that we're not going to be able to, we're not insiders, you know, we're not Lou Elizondo, you know, we're not seeing the files. Like, we're not standing in the office. If me and you were like molders, then yeah, maybe. But at the moment, we're not there yet.
No,
maybe.
This is the thing, is like, you know, we shouldn't pretend to be authorities on it, and we don't, and I'm not, and you're not, and we're just trying to learn, and we are listeners who have just made YouTube channels. That's all we are, is we're just people that have, you know, been paying attention and researching and listening alongside everyone else, but we just decided to make a YouTube channel and a platform and a Twitter and things like that. And you know, I think that you're right. It's good to just ask questions, and I think that it's healthy to do that, because none of us really know what the hell's going on. And this kind of segues into what I was going to ask you before I ran off to get coffee, which was the question of whether or not, to what level do you feel that the US government or any other government or, you know, private industry or whatever, to what level do you feel they are informed on this subject, and to what level do you feel they are ignorant or afraid, or, you know, they just don't understand?
I feel like this subject is so compartmentalized within the facets of government around the world that many probably sectors that don't understand what's going on. You probably saw that article where they were saying like some people in the Pentagon, I think it was, they thought it was like demonic to look into the subject. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's probably a small group or something that has to have a good amount of information and evidence. I mean, we're hearing about the crash retrievals and all that kind of stuff. And I always think like, if they found a crash craft, who's to, like, they probably found bodies. Just like what we heard about in Roswell, like then Roswell doesn't sound that crazy anymore. You know what I mean? But I do think there is a sector of the government, maybe not the government, maybe it's private, like you just said, that has some sort of knowledge. Do I think they know exactly, you know, what the goal of the phenomenon is, what these occupants or these beings or what, you know, this, what the end game is? I don't think so. The only way I think they would be able to do that would be like if they were like working side by side with extraterrestrials or with these occupants, with these beings,
which some people claim is going on.
Some people do claim that, but that's like, I don't know. You know, I can't.
It's deep down the rabbit hole.
We have to. Yeah, like we can go down the rabbit hole, but at the same time, like how much, like first, J. Allen Hynek said something once. He said like it's putting the cart before the horse. You know what I mean? It's first we have to figure out, you know, what the relationship is with the general public, right? Why have these beings been here for so long? What is this phenomenon and why is it interacting with us? Now, if we find out that it's been here forever and somehow, some way it's been working side by side with the superpowers of the world to take us to this, like we were talking about earlier, to this new technological world or to the world that we're living in today, that's going to be, I think, more frightening for everyone else, at least the people that are logical enough to consider it and to think like, well, that's crazy. You know, that's something that nobody's expecting. But I don't know. You know, it's one of those questions. It's like, I don't think we'll know until we're deep inside, but I don't think we're ever going to get that deep. You know, I don't think, like you said earlier, I don't think they're ever going to tell us the whole backstory. They're ever going to say like, okay, these people knew exactly what was going on. We've actually been working with four different species of extraterrestrials. And
yeah. Yeah.
It just, I don't know, you know, but the subject is so deep and so multifaceted as well. The phenomenon itself, I feel that we just talked about it too a minute ago, the humanoid aliens and the anthropomorphic aspect of it. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, everything I've looked into, there's so many things that wouldn't really catch me that off guard. Right. Like if that were the case, I feel like I might be like, okay, well now what does that mean about human society? What influence does that play into? But they might not even have to work with the government. You know, I feel like if they can manipulate our emotions, you know, like in abductee cases, they'll say like, oh, I felt all of a sudden I felt calm, or I don't even remember what happened, or it was communicating with me telepathically. They could literally abduct a world leader and say, you know, kind of guide him into make his decisions for the next year. And maybe they'll appear to the world leader as an angel, you know, or they'll appear as whatever they want to appear as and manipulate the society and the reality that we live in. Maybe it's not like a signed contract. Maybe it's not, you know, I don't know. I've always wanted to sit down with Robert Bigelow.
Oh, yeah.
Coffee with Robert Bigelow. I feel like, you know, people always, they always jump at the throats of these people, like insiders. Mm. Like they'll start to rip them apart, pick them apart. and go like, oh, Robert Bigelow probably doesn't know that much. I'm like, this guy spent millions of dollars.
He knows a lot.
He knows a lot. He actually like, he had like set up that hotline for people to call in, and it was like, they were like calling the FAA, but it would go like to his private company. I think that's what it was. And mm-hmm. imagine the amount of data and the amount of information that guy has. And you know what? I've always said this, but like money is very, very important. Money and connections. If you have money and connections, imagine if you were like Tony Stark, right? And you were looking, trying to find the truth. And you could go to these parties with all these political leaders, and you could get on the inside, and you could get into those hallways and maybe separate yourself from the group a little bit, walk down to that secret file room, or pay somebody the right amount of money to give you that file. You know, I don't know. It's like, we have to understand that there are definitely people out there, in my opinion, that know a lot more.
Yeah. 100%. And you know, Robert Bigelow is definitely one of those people. He's got the history. He's one of the people who's put, he said it himself, and it's true, he has put the most resources towards this. He's poured millions into looking into this subject. So, you know, we're never probably going to find out everything from NIDS. He's got the vault. We've heard about the vault.
Yeah. But like, I've always thought like, how do you get Robert Bigelow's attention? You know? I was like, we should make like a video just like calling out Robert Bigelow, even though he'll probably never see it. But those are the kinds of people we need to let them tell us their story. You know, I feel like a lot of people shun them away. There's a big part of the community that doesn't believe that Robert Bigelow really knows more than what they do. And I'm like, come on, guys. Like, honestly, like, this guy, like we just said, he spent millions looking into this, and he has connections, like, and he's dedicated and trying to figure this out. I don't know. It's like, I don't think there are facets of, I don't know, superpowers around the world that are like shaking hands with ETs and signing contracts. But I think that the ETs may not even have to do that, you know, at the end of the day. Like we talked about it earlier too, like if you think that if we look at the phenomenon and we start to consider that it's been interacting with us forever, it hasn't really openly made itself known to us. It's just kind of been manipulating us throughout, right? Throughout history. Like even when it just shows itself to us, it's kind of in a way like, it's just teasing us. I mean, it's like, hey, we're here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even with, you know, even with my own experiences, I can acknowledge the fact that it's manipulated me, because it completely changed my trajectory in life. Like, you know, I mean, absent the experiences I had, I wouldn't be talking to you. I wouldn't have done anything that I'm doing. It's all based on the fact that these things showed themselves to me. And, you know, through that, a very significant change in my mind occurred, you know, and from that point I had to do something, and I've felt compelled to do it since. And so, you know, whether or not I've been set on the right track, I mean, everything that's been happening, I'm really grateful for. I think it's great. I'm loving Project Unity. I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm enjoying it. I've got a whole new experience. So many people that I'm in, you know, contact with, and I've had some amazing things happen from it. So I, you know, for me personally, it's like, well, it's put me on a positive route. I mean, yes, it has technically manipulated me because it's turned up and caused this change. But, you know, whether or not that was an internal change, or whether they in some way knew that I was going to react, some people have said, I mean, you know, I was talking to Paula Harris, I love Paula Harris. She's such a lovely person. And she was saying, you know, they don't mess around. and they interact with people that they want to interact with, and they know that those people are going to do something about it. And I was like, well, maybe there's some truth to that. I mean, you look at Chris Bledsoe and the things that are going on with Chris Bledsoe. I mean, you know, it seems like some people, and I'm not comparing myself, but it just seems like some people have had experiences, and from that gone on to a path. And obviously, you know, he experienced some really bad things from it in terms of being shunned by his community and people not understanding because of their own, you know, their own perceptions, their own viewpoints on life. He was in a very religious area and they had their own opinions, but that's, I believe, slowly shifted over time. And I think people are recognizing it more and more, but at the same time, you know, he went through some really bad stuff, but at the same time has been compelled to maintain contact because he keeps doing these things and recording orbs and recording phenomena. But he's also gone out and he's spoken about his experiences, and he's put himself out there. So I think that there is, and again, you know, this might be a completely different phenomenon to the abductions. It might be, I don't know, or it could all be the same thing. This is what's really hard to understand, is there's such a difference in experience. Just as there is a difference in phenomenon, there is a difference in experiences. And some have been, you know, traumatic to the point of absolute PTSD for some people, and others have been enlightening moments that have caused what can only be really described as a spiritual awakening. So it's like, well, what's going on here? Is this all the same thing? Is it, if it is, why such different approaches? And you know, that is a very big question.
I don't think it's all the same thing, though, specifically because of what you just said. Like, I don't see, like, it may not all have the same intention, right? Mm-hmm. How that works and why that happens, I don't know. But we can we can see right away, like, the physical differences between, like, seeing an orb and seeing a gray, you know? The visual difference, right? I feel like seeing a gray is a little more, like seeing an orb is fascinating, and it's probably kind of scary, but at the same time, you probably just it's like seeing a craft in the sky. But if a group of alien grays just walked up to you, you'd probably get a little freaked out.
If they ran into my garden instead of a triangle in the sky, I would have freaked out, man.
I'm saying that just seems like a little bit more intense. But at the same time, you know, what you said about the phenomenon knows, like, it's showing itself to certain people. That's actually something I thought about, like, because I'm always like, I wonder why, if I do look into this, and people think that I've only been looking into this, like, since 2017, like, really, I just didn't, like, call myself a researcher. Like, I didn't go around telling people I was researching the UFO phenomenon, but I kind of was my whole life, like, most of my life. And I've always been like, I wonder why they haven't, like, tried to make contact with me or show themselves to me in a way that would change my perspective, like, that, you know what I mean? But I also know that my personality and the way that I see the phenomenon, you know, how I think it could be good, it could be bad, like, it could go one way or the other. That may be a reason why, you know, I don't think they'd want to really abduct me. Like, at the end of the day, even though they supposedly, to any case, you know, when you look into cases, you'll see, like, you don't really have much control of what's going on during an abduction. But, like, I don't think I would go along pretty. I don't think I'd go well in the abduction scenario.
No, me neither.
Yeah, like, especially after doing so much research, like, I would just know exactly what's going on, unless they, like, somehow manipulated me to, like, not think.
I mean, I'm sure they're capable. I mean, obviously I'm speculating, but I'm sure they'd probably be capable of completely erasing that memory. I mean, people have had that where it's just kind of come back in dreams, and obviously that's harder to prove because they say, oh, I've just had very vivid dreams of being abducted. But at the same time, you know, you never know, and it could be real. And you know, perhaps there's just a stronger version of, you know, some form of memory wipe going on, memory screen. Maybe some people are more susceptible than others. I think, well, that's true, isn't it? We know that some humans are more susceptible to what am I trying to, I've lost the word, but I'm just thinking of like behavioral changes, you know, think of like hypnosis. Some people are just very easily hypnotized, some people not. So it could just depend on your cognitive strength, you know, whether or not you're able to remember such an experience.
Yeah, I was also thinking, like, what if some people run on that level of like open oneness without even knowing, you know what I mean? They run on this frequency that other people just don't. So it's like you're kind of attracting the phenomenon to you, but in a way, like, you know how they say some, they talk about abductions and they say it's hereditary at times.
Yeah.
They'll say like, families get abducted one. Or like it goes through the bloodline.
That seems almost indicative of a genetic reason, like a DNA genome reason.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I do think they probably don't interact with certain people. And I think the phenomenon probably doesn't show itself to everybody, but I'm still waiting, you know, for something crazy to happen.
Well, don't wait, go out and initiate. Don't wait, initiate. That should be on a t-shirt. Holy shit. I'm putting on a t-shirt.
You got some merch. Initiate. Yeah. No, definitely. No, I want to experiment more because I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong with experimenting. And like we talked about earlier, meditation seems like it's got some really good benefits. And being like a surfer from California, when I was younger, I think I would meditate more out in the water when I was waiting for waves, you know, early six in the morning and stuff like that.
I'm jealous.
But I really haven't had that same connection, you know, ever since I got older. It's like the hustle and bustle of daily life. It's just, I should take a breath and slow down. My brother's really, if my brother were on here with you, he would have talked your ear off about oneness and consciousness and how the universe is all connected. He'll go to the point where he's like there's no point in, the aliens are part of the oneness. So it's like,
well, you know, that is one thing that people say. And I mean, you know, for me personally, because I do, it's a difficult one, you know, because this gets into such a multi-dimensional problem, because you've got like this question of, is the universe itself a singularity? Like, is consciousness a singularity? Is it just one mind that's been refracted into infinite minds? And at the center of that, there is this one conscious mind that we, you know, on this planet, we call God in various words. And, you know, if that's the case, then in some way, even though obviously this is extremely real, and you'd never deny the feelings you feel in this reality and the different things that you experience, like in some way this is a simulation, like in some way this is a manifestation, a projection of, you know, consciousness, energy acting out different things that it wants to do. And there are a lot of people that would say that essentially the universe is one energy experiencing itself in all these different, you know, avatars, these different bodies, these different forms, and it's just a case of expression beyond expression, you know, continuing expression. And that does, you know, if you're going to, because I kind of see it in two ways, because I do personally lean towards that. I can't prove it, but I do lean towards the idea that everything at the fundamental level is actually this conscious energy. And, you know, whatever that is what we are ultimately. And we're just this very focalized manifestation of that energy in a complex form called a human. But within that, there is all sorts of phenomenon. And so maybe some of this is permeating from the highest level of experience, the highest level of consciousness that we don't understand. And maybe some of this is just coming from the planet Jupiter, you know, it's just, but within, I understand why people use that argument, because it's kind of like, well, yeah, everything ultimately, if we're going to go with that model, is just consciousness expressing itself. But this is a very, very real feeling. So let's not disregard the fact that reality is very bloody real, you know, because it feels pretty real. And, you know, you can't deny that. And so, you know, within this experience that you can't just plug out of, like you were with a VR headset, you know, you can't just put it down. Within this experience, which you can't escape from, there is stuff that's happening. And there may be stuff from other planets. There may be stuff from other dimensions. Maybe the universe is a multiverse, you know, that's why I'm saying it's such a multidimensional problem, because there's just so many different things to address there. There's so many different questions. But I would, you know, I would tend to lean towards, at least because of my experiences with the idea that consciousness can extend beyond the body, it makes me feel like consciousness itself is just what the universe is. And it's just being, you know, essentially projected in different forms, from a tree to a table to a human.
Well, yeah, that's kind of where he goes. And then it ends up going like, well, there's no need to search, bro.
I like to search.
I'm like, wait. So, cause he'll go like, he'll start talking. Then he goes like, so everything is just consciousness and it's all coming from one source. So you are the tree, you are that, you know? And I'm like, he's like, you are the alien. So you don't even need to look for it. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I'm like, you know what? Let me figure out the phenomenon first, and then we can worry about how deep consciousness is.
Well, this is actually where I've landed, because I can't say for sure that, you know, what your brother's saying is true, even though I do lean towards it. I know I said I wasn't always interested in the UFO subject, but I've always been a curious, questioning person. You know, I've always, you know, daydreamed and thought about life and space and how big the universe is. And, you know, when I was a kid, I used to think about the fact that, wow, we're just this like tiny little planet. And I still think that. I have these moments where I just sit and I'm like, we are just this tiny planet, like this, like so small. As Carl Sagan said, a mote of dust trapped in a sunbeam. That is how he described it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is true. We are just this little speck of dust. And look at the insanely beautiful complexity, and also the, you know, terrible things that happen. But all of it so complex, such an immense theater of experience on a tiny little particle in this huge, we can't even fathom. We don't know how big universe. And it's just kind of, you know, how do people not, now that we're not in the Stone Age and we have internet connection and we can actually learn about these things, and we can, you know, I mean, obviously some people unfortunately have a lot of pollution and don't get to see the beautiful night sky, and, you know, that sucks. But, you know, how do we not sit back, more of us as a human collective, and go, what is going on? Why are we all just plugged into these little realities of working these little jobs? And it's frustrating, because I feel like it's almost like we've been engineered to be that way, not by ETs, but by this stupid system that we're still upholding. We're just running around in this ridiculous circuit board of frantic behavior and technological progress with no empathy and no real kind of like development of the self. And it just seems like, you know, why are people not slowing down for a moment and just thinking, hang on, like, why am I even alive? What is it? What is awareness? Why am I aware? What is this? You know, that's the stuff that I genuinely still roll over every day. What the hell is going on, just in general?
Yeah. No, but I am, you know what? I'm exactly the same. I am exactly the same. I don't get so, you know, like my brother's a lot more, you know, he's a lot more into the, what it would be like the metaphysical, right?
Yeah.
I've always just been, I'm not closed-minded to it. Like I'm telling you, like I want to try the C5 a few more times. I want to, you know, learn how to meditate and open myself up. Because I do believe in all that, because I believe reality itself is fascinating. Like it's magical. And like what you were saying, when you look at space, I look at space all the time. Like I do that. I just go on. I like looking at photos of, you know, the Milky Way and all the different stuff you can look at on the NASA webpage and stuff like that. And I think space is fascinating. And I think the ocean, you know, the deep sea is fascinating. All the whole planet in general that we live on, and this idea that there are all these other planets, people live in this society where we're like mice running through a maze. And it's really sad to think that, you know, at the end of it all, you're just a paycheck. You know, at the end of it all, you're just a tax ID number, and you never think outside the box, and you never, you know, wake up and think about reality and why we're here. You know, a big part of my search is that I feel like finding out a bit of the truth, like getting closer to the truth for this phenomenon, will help us in whole understand who we are and where we're from. And if maybe if we understood that we weren't alone in the, you know, in this reality as an intelligent being, if we knew there were others, we would finally unify and understand that we're all the same species, and that this whole entire planet is our planet. Like, instead of saying I was born in California, I could say I was born on Earth. You know, I'm a human being. Like, I totally think about that stuff all the time. I think it's a huge driving force for me even doing this.
Yeah.
You know, because there's moments where I'll feel like I have my back against the wall. You know, I went down too many rabbit holes, and I'm thinking, oh, this is great. Like you were saying, your experience is awesome. You know, like you have your channel, it's growing, you're meeting all these awesome people. You're learning more about the phenomenon, but then you see certain people like that have looked into this subject for many years, like we were saying earlier, and they're just frustrated because they can't find that answer that they're looking for, you know? And I think, will that happen to me? You know, like, will I end up being frustrated in 15 years?
Well,
or what, you know,
I guess it depends on what you're looking to get out of this right now.
Exactly. Like, I'm really more into it for my, you know, for building my, my experience, and just, it's part of the journey.
For me, it's like, it's like a neutral learning almost. Like, I'm not, you know, I would love, I mean, there's things I've got hopes and wishes and dreams when it comes to this subject and where it might go. But in terms of like the reality of what I see going on, I'm actually just quite happy learning and watching what's going on and keeping up to date with it and seeing where it goes and hopefully having some more experiences. And, you know, I'm not expecting the whole world to have a disclosure moment in, you know, a few years time. I would love for it to happen, but it's not, I feel like, you know, it's not worth gearing yourself up for something like that. Instead, just do whatever it is you want to do. If you want to do something related to this, then, you know, get involved, make a platform, do a channel, whatever you want to do to try and push this forward and get it out there. You know, because for me, all I want to do is try and learn, and through that, help others learn. So that's why recently, more than ever, and it's going to become, I think, more of a trend for me, is having people on and just talking. And, you know, whether that be a PhD scientist or, you know, someone like yourself who's just like me on the internet researching this. And I think that that's the best thing we can do, at least as individuals who don't have, like you said, Robert Bigelow money and access like that. Without that type of access, I think the best thing we can do is just have communication and discourse about this, you know?
Yeah, 100%, totally. So I 100% agree with you. That's actually kind of what I was saying too, like yesterday on my live. Like, I feel like it's so important to have Discord and to discuss this and to understand that we all have different opinions, we all have different thoughts on this, and none, like you said, none of us know the truth. You know, none of us have the answers yet. I'm an average guy trying to figure this out, just like the rest of, you know, the rest of everybody else. So it's also, I feel like having these kinds of thinking like a philosopher, you know, like trying to really see the universe and reality for what it is helps you grow as a person and helps you really see life a little more beautifully, you know?
Totally. It's a healthy thing. And I think, you know, for me, it's like, for me, it's all about a little symbiosis, you know, it's equilibrium. It's about having a balance about your metaphysical and the physical, because I struggle with people that are just completely 100% spiritual, and I struggle with people that are just completely 100% reductionist, scientific. Mm-hmm. Everything is dead matter and nothing exists outside of the body. Like, I struggle with both of those polarities. I think that you do need to have the ability to understand the physical universe to a degree and acknowledge its physicality as it is and what we're discovering it to be, but also to acknowledge the fact that there is actually a deeper level than just this physicality, and that there is something beyond it, and that doesn't necessarily attack science or destroy science. In fact, I think it actually is integral. I think it's married and coupled with science if we accept it, because what we might be looking at is the physical rules that we use in our science have risen from consciousness, from this universal mind. And if that is the case, then it's not separate and it shouldn't be treated as separate, because these two things complement and came from each other. It arose from itself. The rules that we use to define our entire lives
exactly.
and reality were comprised potentially by this energy. And so, you know, if that's the case, then we shouldn't throw that out. I think the biggest mistake we have made as a human species is the separation of science and spirit. And I know that it's a buzzword, and maybe we need to try and find a better word for spirit or soul, because, you know, people don't like that. But there is this everlasting essence, this energy, this I don't know what to call it, this part of you that just doesn't die, this energy, I guess we could call it, a conscious energy that exists within this body, is kind of keeping it all held together. But then once it dies, I just don't believe that the energy dies with it, because that's not that goes against what we know. No, energy can't be destroyed.
Yeah, totally. I 100% agree with you. And also something I think about a lot too is, you know, science and our understandings of measuring space and time and reality, right? Everything we base our understanding of what is real and what isn't, it's really all generated by, you know, like you were saying, by consciousness, maybe, right? Maybe it all stemmed from that same place. But I go like just at the bare roots idea, where like we've created everything. We've created all the measurements. Human beings have like said, okay, this is time. This is how time works. And this is a clock. And this is how you measure time. And this is like, what if the phenomenon or whatever, right? We come into contact with something and it says, you guys are looking at everything completely wrong. Mm-hmm. All the science you're using is garbage. All your measurements that you're using are garbage. Reality is nothing like you guys are thinking. And you guys have been living like this whole time. Like, it's something I've thought about a bunch of times.
I think that's
like,
true. I think that's true.
Like think about it. Every aspect of what we believe to be real is literally it's been created by a human mind. So it has spawned from consciousness. Everything, even when you, you know, the buildings, the cars, the planes, the streets, the roads, the houses, the clothes we're wearing, every little thing has spawned from out of a person's mind. So it's crazy to think about. And then when I start to think about the parameters and the, you know, the labels and the limits that we put on things, I think like, how do we know any of this is correct? Like, I understand that if you talk to a brilliant scientist, he'll have a way to explain it, you know, but because the explanation he's using is an explanation that was created by a human mind.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy, but I'm saying, well, like the rules, we made the rules. So
and the rules
how do we know we're making
the, you know,
exactly.
The rules change,
the rules
over,
change
time.
Over time. And how do we, and how do we know the rules are even the right rules? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Not. It's something I thought about a bunch. Like,
you know,
they're probably not.
You know, you're right. It's funny because I actually was talking about this not that long ago, but it's the thing that happens, it seems, through every single time period, is you have a scientific series of rules and statements that are abided by and adhered to, and if you challenge them, you're considered completely outside of the circle, and you're usually ostracized and you know, basically made pariah and taken out of your intellectual community. And then 20, 30, 40 years down the line, or perhaps if you're really unlucky, you die and then you don't even get to like rub it in their faces, everyone goes, oh, he was right, or they were right, or she was right. And so, you know, I think that it's really interesting to me that you still have this issue going on, because you'd think that people would, especially extremely intelligent people, would be able to take a step back and go, well, hang on, let's not repeat the past mistakes. Let's look into it, because people seem to be saying a lot about it, and let's see what's going on. But unfortunately, and I think that this just proves that everyone's fallible, because even the greatest minds within the intellectual circles that basically keep the innovation running on this planet, there is huge amounts of dogma and bias and ego and stigma and opinions, and people have written papers. And if that paper is then challenged by another theory, you know, they'll get their colleagues to bully that person out of the community. And that happens, you know, I mean, that does happen. And so I think that you're just dealing with a human issue right there, right? You're dealing with a human issue of people dismiss too much because it challenges their idea and they think their idea is 100%. Totally. And your idea is not 100% because reality is completely strange. And I, you know, that's why I try not to settle on anything specific and say this is the way it is, because I don't know. I only have suspicion. I have some, you know, knowledge and self-experience and intuition. That's all I've got. And, you know, I think that if you're going to be honest with yourself and you're going to honestly look into things like this, you have to be ready to change your mind frequently.
Oh, definitely. No, I change my mind all the time. All the time. Like, I always say that I'm like not putting my chips all in one corner. Like, I'm just telling you guys what I'm thinking at the moment. You know, like, I might be wrong tomorrow. I really always take the story of Giordano Bruno. He was a philosopher, right? You know the story where the church, I think, burned him alive, right? Okay. Because of his ideas. And then he was right. Like, his theories were correct, but they literally burned him alive.
Yeah.
Like, they put him on a stake.
And that's what happens now, that's what happens now in terms of your social credentials, in terms of your academic stance. You know, they destroy you. They burn you alive.
Yeah, and it only happens figuratively now because it's no longer okay.
Yeah.
For, you know, now everybody's like, oh no, you can't just burn somebody alive. Yeah. But it was always wrong to burn people alive. Yeah. Burn them on Twitter instead. Yeah.
Lots of Twitter burns going around.
It was always wrong to do that. Lots of Twitter burns going around. But so yeah, I mean, that's one thing I'm grateful for from all this. Like, I'm grateful for meeting people like you and the community that I'm building. And it's awesome to see like other communities growing. And also, like, it's just really made me look at reality a whole different way. I also feel like I would have never, ever been able to ignore it. I've never been able to not look at reality the way we just talked about. You know, it's just been the way I've always looked at reality since I was a child. Like, I could not look at the stars, you know, I could not think that there was something more out there. And it led me here. It led me to this moment. It led me to have a channel, you know, like the one that I have now. But let's talk about Twitter. People burning people on Twitter. I got to say, I've had some of that happen to me, and I don't get it. You know, I don't get why people are so intense on the internet. Like, I'm a real nice guy online because I try to be nice often, you know, like always in life. But in reality, I'm not like the nicest guy. You know, like, if you were to come say that Twitter post to me, like, you know, whoever, that negative comment that they leave, if you were to say that to me, like, in the street or outside, in the manner that you're saying it online, I may not be the nicest guy, you know?
Yep.
But because it's online, I'm like, I don't even waste my time half the time, but I don't get it. It's,
I,
like,
think
this,
you answered your own question, obviously, right there.
Yeah.
Like, because it's the fact that they can't get punched in the face.
Yeah, I think it is. Because I think that does go into play. And if you're somebody that punches people in the face, you'll know that when you go say something to somebody, you might get punched in the face. So I always try to, like, you know, I'm really nice and respectful. Always. I try to be, but I've been punched in the face before. But because I knew what I was saying it to their face, you know what I mean? I was fighting for something that I believed in and I got punched in the face. I'm not going to waste my time online arguing, you know, with somebody and insulting them over a sub, and especially in our, you know, in the subject we talk about, because I feel like And nobody really knows what's going on. And those people that are saying that they have the answers, I don't really believe them.
Well, you should immediately not trust them, in my opinion. You should immediately disregard people like that who say that they indefinitely know.
The snake oil sellers.
Yeah.
I'm always going to try to present myself like I do now and let people know, like, no matter what, like, I don't have the answers. And even if I think even if I ever do somehow, some way, find an answer, I will still try to present it in a way like where I'm not coming off like I know the answers. Because just like telling my story earlier about the train thing, I really, like, I gotta say, like, I tell it and I tell the shadow people's story or the shadow being story. But I remember before, like, ever coming on, you know, going on a podcast or talking to you or, you know, sharing, having a conversation with somebody that would actually listen to me, and your subscribers are going to hear the story. I remember talking to my father about it, and he was like, he totally believed me because he could see my fear. After so many years, I still tell him the story. I get uncomfortable. But he was like, remember, try not to spread too many of those, you know, of your experiences out there, because you don't want to lose. You don't want people to start thinking that you're making stuff up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think if you really do know the truth about this phenomenon, you're going to have to take that same approach. Like, you're going to have to, not like me telling the story, but like maybe like Lou Elizondo trying to not break an NDA and kind of like sneaking things in there and hinting at us and stuff like that. Or like Robert Bigelow in that 60 Minutes interview, hinting stuff in there and just saying stuff, but not really telling us what it is, because it may be unbelievable for the human mind.
Yeah. I feel where you're coming from. Like I said, I've been selective with who I talk to in regards to my experience, even though obviously I'm candid on my channel, because obviously I can be. That's the whole point of it, is to present this stuff. Like, yeah, there's a degree of hesitance when I, you know, talk to other people. It's like when people ask, like, what do you do? You know, so what do you do? Like, oh fuck. What do I say? So it's difficult because, you know, there is this stigma, and it's a hard thing to process for a lot of people. And I think for me, because I've had repeated experiences, especially because, you know, I've had these four separate experiences with orange orbs, and I've had a lot of different strange phenomena in the sky because I've just gone out and done it a lot. You know, it's been almost normalized for me, and I forget. I forget that not only is the UFO topic, you know, really controversial outside of a certain percentage of people, but the idea of contacting them, like, dude, like, you know, come on, that's so far outside the envelope of most people's understanding of normal that, you know, I am hesitant, but I feel I have to talk about this, you know, because it did happen. And, it seems important. It seems like there's something going on there, and that other people should be trying to at least look into this. Like, why can we send out some form of signal that they respond to? You know, not only have we got this crazy technological asset, we've got this platform that is capable of, you know, aeronautical capabilities beyond anything we can even imagine, and but at the same time it's responding, if it's the same thing, at the same time it's responding to people in their back gardens who are sending up thoughts, like, you know, what's there's so many questions, man. And, like, you know, I want to talk to Christopher Mellon. I'm trying to interview him. I want that to happen so badly. You know, I sent him a DM.
You may get it.
I did. I don't want to. I'm trying to play it cool. I don't want to blow up his DMs. Yeah. You know, I sent him it because, you know,
no.
It blew my mind that he started following me. I can't believe it. And you know, I sent him a message and I'm waiting. I'm just waiting, but I'm really hoping I can, because I would love to ask him. I know that he's gonna have to play it close. He can't say too much, but I would love to just, you know, because no one has asked him questions about consciousness, and I'd love to be the first.
You know, I'm gonna be honest. I think he's gonna give you a response.
Oh,
a response
I hope so.
That you may want, because I feel like behind that man is some. Oh, he's got an open mind. You know what I mean? Like, definitely. He's definitely like. I love to hear his, you know, his thoughts whenever he speaks on the subject, because I feel like. He's clear, he's coherent, and he, you can tell that he's really thinking about it in different ways.
And he just brings such a level of credibility to it. I mean, you know, not only the fact that he's the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, like that's huge, like the second highest ranking in the U.S. intelligence bureaucracy. And so he's someone that is so good for skeptics, because, you know, even the most hardened skeptic cannot really, you know, if they're being honest with themselves, sit through a long format discussion from Christopher Mellon and say, I don't trust that guy's, you know, I don't believe that guy, he's BS. It's like, come on, man, at that point you're just being ridiculous, because he just brings a level of credibility to it that's so refreshing. I mean, Lou Elizondo as well, and obviously the others, but I feel like Christopher Mellon especially just brings like this really calm, collected, and just to the point. And he just comes off like he really does know what he's talking about. And I guarantee he knows so much more than he's able to say.
Oh, 100%. I feel like that whole team, I feel like even people hate on Tom DeLonge so much, but
oh, he knows
again,
stuff.
back to the idea of connections and money.
Yeah, he knows.
You know, that's a perfect example of connections and money right there. It's a
absolutely
a story managed, like out of a comic book.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, well, I'm saying you got to give credit where credit's due, and he's 100%. Got a team of really reliable, you know, really reliable team. They're doing great work, and will they make mistakes? Yes, they will make mistakes. Will me and you make mistakes? Yes, we will make mistakes, but that's what, you know. We're dealing with an unexplained phenomenon. People think, I'm like, I always get so frustrated when people are like, no, it's this way or it's that way. I'm like, really, guys, come on. Like, it could be anything. Like, it's called an alien phenomenon for a reason, you know, like.
Well, you know, it's like I uploaded, and this is about people assuming a terrestrial thing, but some people just make throwaway comments, and you know, if you're listening to this right now, anyone who was watching the video I uploaded recently, which was a series of videos of UAPs doing different types of visual performances, and some of them look like they were signaling, you know, the initial video that was filmed on, I think it was like Rosarito Beach or something like that, which there is a link for that in the description box of that video that I played. And, you know, I got a couple of comments from people saying, oh, that's just a flare. They're just flares. And this annoys me, because with this video in particular, and I might actually play this sequence on the screen while we're talking right now. I'll remember to
do
it. Post-production. you know, there's a scene in particular where, you know, you have this bright, it's on night vision, and you have this bright glowing object. And then one appears next to it by the side, and then within the space of a second it flies a complete 90 degree and it appears underneath the other one and then starts glowing. And you can see this happening on screen right now as I'm talking. There's this, you know, this little dot that just flies underneath, and I'm sorry, but a flare can't do that. And this video is 30 minutes long in total, and some people haven't watched the whole thing, and it just frustrates me, because, you know, it's a throwaway comment. And I just, one thing that does annoy me is people on both sides of this, you know, people who over speculate on what it could be and say, oh, it's definitely Palladians from the star system, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and then there's the people who go, oh, that's just a flare. Oh, that's just a bug. Oh, that's just a, you know, this, that, and the other. It's just a satellite. And it's like, right, yes, there are plenty of videos like that. But the ones that I chose in that video, I'm pretty confident in. And, you know, I don't know. It gets to me. It annoys me when people say something like that, when there's clearly more to it in that video than just a flare. I find that it's just dismissive and it's quite lazy. And so, you know, you've got assumptions made on both sides, but I wanted to bring that up because it just got me in the wrong place, that when people were putting comments about flares. I get it, but not with this one. There's behavior that's going on that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think I'm checking it out. It's the UAP visual performance.
Yeah, that's the one.
Signaling
So,
is that one?
hang on a second. If I mean, I'll have it playing in the video, but for you as a time reference, if you go down to the comment section, I've actually put a comment saying, "Have you ever seen a flare do that?" And it's at 1 minute and 51 seconds. And if you watch the 1 minute and 51 second mark, just watch the little blinking light. It goes from the right-hand side of the orb directly to the bottom in less than a second. And I'm sorry, but a flare is not capable of a directional change like that.
Oh yeah, I just saw it.
Yeah, play it a couple
Yeah,
times and
no,
you'll see what
that's
I
pretty.
mean. Like, yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
some people will be like, "Oh, it's just a tiny little movement." It's like, no, I'm sorry, that's not a tiny little movement. That is a very drastic change in direction that you would just not get from a flare. So I just don't understand. And if you watch the whole 30 minutes, and that's linked in the description box, it's a long contact with various things going on. So it's just when people don't do the research and they immediately just go, "Oh, it's this," and it's like, well, that's not coming from an informed opinion, and it's really annoying when you get that.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And that happens a lot, man. That happens a lot. Like, there's literally, I try not to post UFO videos on
Yeah, me
Twitter or
neither.
anywhere
I
because
yeah.
I'm just like, somebody's gonna come for me. And
Always.
I'm not really like afraid of them, you know? I'm more afraid of like, people tarnishing your credibility at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, that's why I chose a very select few videos that I was quite confident in. And I've actually, and for people that might have noticed this, I might as well just say it because it's the truth. And I'm going to actually do something about maybe having a clips channel. But I have made quite a few videos private that are just straight up UFO videos when I didn't have so much of a coherent plan for Project Unity and I was just uploading anything I saw. I was uploading, lots of different UFO videos. And I think there's merit to a lot of them, but there's, at the same time, I can't validate a lot of those, and I don't know the background to them. I couldn't find background to them, and as I've kind of matured through what I'm doing, I felt that it was counterproductive to have stuff like that that can't be confirmed. And so, I've distanced myself from uploading just UFO and UAP videos, but with these particular ones, I have done it because I trust like the people that have recorded some of these contacts, and other ones I've put in there because I've seen exactly basically the same thing, and so I'm
Yeah.
pretty confident that this is actually happening. But yeah,
Yeah.
you're right. You have to be so careful because like there's literally miles upon miles of bullshit just going on in here. Like it's just like there's a mountain of absolute rubbish and absolute fakes, and then underneath that is this amazing layer of truth.
Yeah, totally. And there are some really good fakes. The other day, did you see that Instagram post from Tom DeLonge? It was like an orb floating over some water or like a lake in Russia.
And then it
And
zips off. It's when it zips off that I was a bit dubious.
yeah, but the thing was, is like when you found the, everyone was saying that maybe they're going to test it in that, what's the name of the app? I'm forgetting the name of the app that they're going
Scout.
to use in Scout. Yeah, they're going to use Scout to test it. Like he knew it was fake and he was posting it because he knew it was fake. And that's why they were going to run it through Scout. And I was like, I don't know, maybe he didn't. Like that, if you look at the video, it's pretty good, right? But when you check out the channel that that video came from, it's this Russian YouTuber, and his other videos, he's got this video where he takes some glass, he breaks a piece of glass, and he like it's in Russian, so I don't know exactly what he's doing. We should all check it out and find out. But I think he's like charging. He like breaks a lighter and he uses like the electric part of the lighter to like charge the glass, I'm thinking. I don't know, right? Basically, he uses this piece of glass to make it look like there's a saucer in the sky. But he's literally using a piece of glass in front of a lens and he's just moving the piece of glass around, and because it's a clear piece of glass, it looks like there's a saucer in the sky. Like it's done really well. And then that same channel, he's got like even in the bio of his channel, he's like, these videos are for fun. None of this is real, basically.
Well, this is an issue, right? And I've said it publicly on Twitter, and I don't mind saying it again. And
Yeah.
because And this is echoing back to what I just said about me doing the same thing in terms of reducing content of unsubstantiated UFO videos, is Tom DeLonge, and he said this himself, and he said it on the Joe Rogan Experience, that he represents more than himself these days. And that's true. He absolutely does represent more than himself. And, you know, some people were saying, oh, well, you know, you don't know if he was, you know, if it's fake, you don't know if he was trying to like do that. But that's the, for me, that's the point. The point is you don't know. And he has, in my opinion, he's got a position of influence and a position of authority with this now, where if he's going to post an unsubstantiated video from a very suspicious YouTube channel that seems to be directly saying that these are fake, and he's not saying they're fake when he's putting them on Twitter, you know, this is the problem. Is it, you know, people can say it's innocent, but at the same time, he is at the forefront of a company that is basically running the transparency on the UFO issue in the US. And I just feel like he's got a responsibility as the CEO of To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science to not post unsubstantiated, uncredible videos online, or at least if he's going to do that, to outline his reason for doing that. Because if it is for scout, it should be saying this is a unsubstantiated video where we are unsure of what is in this, whether it's a fake or not, and we are using it through the scout to validate the authenticity. But he didn't say that. And
No, he said, I'm going to run it through. We have to run this through some artificial intelligence or something like that. But I totally see how you could make that mistake and how you could put that up. For me, that video is completely fake, but it's a good fake. And it's crazy. If you check out the channel, you'll see like the guy's channel is literally dedicated to making really good fake UFO
Oh, he's a
videos.
son of a bitch
Yeah, I mean, but it's crazy because he does it in a way like I want to see if I can maybe replicate it just for the channel, you know, just to show
then.
people like
Unless
how
he
simple
does
it
it, yeah, unless he does it in a way that almost is showing how it can be faked, because that's fine. Like if he's kind
is.
of
No,
showing the method.
that's the thing. It's like I think there's a part in the video or in the channel. There's a video. I have to look back, but I think there's a video where he shows you the method, and then he shows you how he uses the glass and puts it in front of the lens, and then you see like the UFO, the what you thought was a UFO 2 minutes ago, right? So you're like, but it was crazy because it's literally a piece of glass in front of a lens, and I don't know.
Well, you know, he's uploaded a few. He's uploaded quite a few videos and sent out a few videos of unsubstantiated UFO videos, and I don't know. Like I get that, you know, because I love Tom. Like this is the thing. I'm not trying to have a major go at him, because I support Tom and I think that what he's done is amazing. But I just feel like within his level, he's just got a certain responsibility to at least be clear with what's going on. Because if people, because this is the thing, you know, even people who have spent years in the UFO community get duped by videos that turn out to be fakes. But you know, because To the Stars Academy's reached out to the mainstream in a bit, you've got people that have only just come into this that are literally hanging on to the words of TTSA, and that's it. You know, they're listening to Tom DeLonge and TTSA, and that is literally all that they really know, and they haven't really looked for any further. So if they're seeing Tom DeLonge post this and then it's later being found out to be fake, it's kind of like really eroding any trust that he's just gained from new people. And the whole point of all of this is to get new people engaged. We don't want to be a niche. We don't want to be 0.1% of the population interested in this. We want the whole world to be interested. So if you're gonna do that, don't post fake videos.
But you know, it goes back to human error, and it goes back
Yeah,
to
hope so.
it goes really I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I agree 100%. I actually sent Tom DeLonge the channel. Like, I tweeted him and I was like, hey, look, I don't think you're going to need to run this through any AI system.
Yeah, it's been thoroughly debunked already.
And yeah, no, I'm like, check out the channel. A lot of people were like, they thought it might be real, and I was like, check out the channel, it's totally probably fake. Most likely, like, it's a guy that fakes UFO sightings. But then people started, you know, protecting Tom. But I wasn't trying to be mean to Tom. I was just saying, hey, I'm giving you a heads up because I respect you, and here, check this out. And I also know, like, I'm telling you about like not posting UFO videos because I feel like I know, you know, like exactly how Tom must feel. You know, like I actually made like a video once about some photos of like a moon, like the moon and like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was some photos that had to do with the moon. And it, for me, it looked like a saucer, but it ended up being like a crater with a shadow in it. You know what I mean? Like, and I made a whole video. I made the whole video. I uploaded the video. And then I was like researching a little more, and I was like, wait a minute, dude, this is probably like a crater with a shadow in it. And I'm made a whole video about it. Like,
I've done the exact same thing. You know, I've even uploaded some that I've had to retract, you know, we all make mistakes.
That's why I didn't even take it down. I just forgot about it. It's just there somewhere on the channel, but I'm saying like, I totally understand, you know, how he can make mistakes. And also, let's not forget, he's the rock star. You know what I mean? He's the reckless one. He's the one that's gonna get it, do those kinds of things.
No, I totally agree.
Or it is what some of the community was saying, and he's just hinting at like that they're gonna debunk it, and they think it's a good fake, so they're gonna use it to test on the AI system. Yeah. But like you said, I even said, I think in the thread of tweets that I sent him, I was like, or to somebody, I said exactly what you said. Like, he should at least clarify, because a lot of the community has like pitchforks and axes when it comes to Tom DeLonge and TTSA. Some people listen to every word they say, and then some people just want to rip them apart.
Well, this is the thing, man. Like, respecting someone is different to hanging on to everything they say and believing everything they say and never questioning them and, you know, fighting anyone off that even tries to call them out, because that's in my opinion is an immature way of being when it comes to this. Like, you know, it's like, with Tom DeLonge, I respect the guy, obviously, why wouldn't I, for everything that he's pulled off. Does that mean that I'm not going to question him if I find his methods questionable? Absolutely not. Like, I'll call him out on anything. I want people to call me out if they think that I'm being questionable. Exactly. You know, if they think that I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, they should be like, Jay, you know, that's not really right. And I want that. And you know, we need that. You don't want to just be a blind follower. And you know, that's another issue, is you just got people with knee-jerk reactions that don't want to listen and have these types of ways of following people. But I just think that, you know, when it comes to Tom DeLonge, he's done so much. He should be respected. I think that if he pulls off what he intends to pull off, he'll probably be remembered forever, which is weird, you know, because he's not just a rock star. I don't want to just diminish him and put him into a little box. He's not just a rock star, but he is a, you know, celebrity, and not the type of person that you would have put up as the person that would
imagined.
Be the flag bearer of this stuff. But he's done so much, he should be respected. But at the same time, if he's putting videos up without really telling us what they're about, and then they turn out to be fake, think that's a stupid move. And you know, if I did that, I would like people to call that out, and I would try and change my direction. And I think that if Tom ever by some miracle listens to the final segment of this like 3.5 hour interview, you know, then he should probably change his direction as well. But that's just some friendly advice from someone that wants to see this go out in the best way.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. I agree. And like you said, I've made it clear a lot of times, like when I talk to people, like, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm totally going to go down the wrong path. I'm totally going to do the wrong thing. I'm going to look down the wrong rabbit hole. That's why the community is here. That's why all your listeners, your subscribers, your viewers are here. They respect you and support you, but also they're here to help you out. It's like a friend, you know, like your friend's not going to let you do anything ridiculous. A good friend will try and stop you and tell you, hey man, don't do that. Like,
100%. You know, you got to be humble as well. You got to be humble. You got to, you know, cause I've found this, we might have to nip this off soon, cause it's 1 AM now. So I'm starting to flag, but, I wanted to just like put on a note on this fact that I found that, oh God, you know, this is the evidence of it being 1 AM. I've literally just forgotten everything I was about to say.
If
you have some words to say, I'll think about what I was gonna say.
It's all right, man. Look, this is the fireside chat. It's literally like we're sitting around a fire talking. So it, you know, I think it's a cool way to communicate. It's kind of laid back, but Yeah, look, this conversation and the talk that we had tonight, I feel like it is it's been really good, and I'm glad that you're open to have these kinds of conversations, and that you would invite me here and we could do this, because this is literally what more people in the community need to do.
Yeah,
we need to stop fighting, stop bickering, stop trying to, you know, jump at people's throats when they make a mistake, or, you know, if you don't like somebody's theories, ignore them. Yeah. You know, don't try to rip them down and bash them. People have this idea like that one. No. People have this idea that like one account on Twitter is going to change UFO history.
Yeah.
Or UFO, the future of ufology. I don't think that's what's going to happen. If somebody makes a mistake, they make a mistake. We correct absolutely. It, we fix it, and we move together forward. That's it. So this kind of stuff is very important. So I'm glad to be here, man.
And also, and this is what I remember. Thank you very much. No, it's a pleasure to have you on. Like, I've just remembered what I was going to say, and it just relates into that, because, you know, take a break from this crazy shit as well. Like, especially Twitter, because, you know, I personally, you know, I found that I would get more aggressive and I would get more impatient after a while, of doing this and interacting with people and talking and having similar discussions, having the same arguments. I think that's one problem, is when you've had the same argument with different people or the same discussion or the same debate, you can't, you know, and Twitter is a very aggressive place, I think, for a few different reasons, one of them being the anonymity, or at least the separation from the risk of physical violence like we were talking about before, but also the fact that there's a word limit and people just want to spew out what they want to spew out, and take a break from it, people, because I found that when I was in that place all the time, with most of my day being spent flitting between Twitter, I just found that I was getting more not like fully argumentative, but more aggressive, man, like more just like kind of jumping on people and going like, no, it's not like that. And it's like, that's not who I am. Like, Twitter can F people's minds up a bit. So that's my parting advice, would be for people to stay interested in this, but take a break from the online stuff, because it really can mess with your head and turn you into someone that you're not.
I agree, man. Totally. 100%. So that's some great advice. Definitely. It's getting late for you, man.
It is. It's 4 minutes past 1 a.m. and I've got a lot of coffee in me. So I'm probably not going to sleep. I'm probably just going to start trying to get a little bit of this like processed into my editing software, and then I'll try and sleep. But dude, this has been really cool. I've really enjoyed this. It's actually, I think, the longest conversation I've had, other than maybe the Admiral Wilson breakdown. I'm not quite sure. Yep. But this has been really cool. And like you said, I think we should do more of these. I think more people should do more. I think maybe we should invite some more people to the campfire. Maybe we can have a panel, a little group campfire discussion at some point.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime, man. Anytime you want to talk, even not even recorded, you just let me know.
For sure. Definitely. Also, feel free to obviously post this onto your channel as well.
Can I tell people, like, hey, make sure to go check out my channel and subscribe if you absolutely like the conversation tonight.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, my mind's not working 100%. Yeah. Please do check out the Undead Gaucho's channel.
Yeah, definitely. Come hang out. It's the same guy you heard through this whole conversation. And the Project Unity is a cool dude. So thank you, man, for inviting me. And have a good night, man. It's late. Go to sleep.
Yeah. I'll try my best. Man. I'm pretty caffeinated, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah, once again, just thanks for being on, dude. Really appreciate your time.